Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of the Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Oh, Lane, Lane, where have you been? We've all been waiting for you. You come and sit right down here. Have you met Monique?
Hi.
Now, in honor of our special guest, I've created dinner mondu. First, we have French fries and French dressing and French bread. And to drink, ta-da, Peru.
Jenny Meyer, you really do go to the outer limits to make an impression.
Well, Monique, enjoying your stay in our town?
I say, are you enjoying your stay in our town?
She doesn't speak English, Dad.
Of course she does.
Are you enjoying your stay?
It's no good, Al. She don't speak a word.
Wait a minute. I thought these foreign exchange students had to speak some amount of English to come over here.
Well, as we're discovering around our household, you don't need words to speak the international language. Right, Ricky? The international language. You know. Love. The language of love. I think Monique and our little Ricky have a regular cross-continental romance brewing here.
Him?
Mm-hmm.
And her?
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Jennifer, this is fabulous liqueur.
Reminds me of the moonshine Ricky's dead pappy used to make.
God bless him.
Mrs. Smith, no, wait! Yeah, I'm real sorry your mom blew up, Ricky.
Why, hello, it is 28 minutes after the hour of 1, and this the month of February in the year of our Lord, 2011. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network. Isn't that right, Don Taylor?
We are here.
Here, high above
despite the blizzard and the snow and the cold and the horrible conditions outside.
Because that's how much we care, Don, because nothing is going to keep us from entertaining the good people of Portland, Oregon, and beyond.
Not snowpocalypse or snow pockets or
Snowmageddon.
Snowmageddon or Snowlandia.
With a bird on it.
With a bird on it.
Here's the thing, I haven't actually put that up online anywhere. I didn't put it on the thing about it is like I wanted to put it on Twitter or TwitPic, and then it's like here's the thing about that KGW Snowlandia logo, it is the rare image that was actually too stupid to go on the internet. I mean, I actually felt like it was so dumb, it was so bad and so ill-advised that it just had no place being put on the World Wide Web. It was just, it would have lowered the mean baseline for communication intelligence.
Yeah, if you Google Snowlandia KGW, by the way, it links to their Facebook page, which I haven't clicked on these, but apparently they also had a... I think where they wanted you to name the storm.
Yeah. No.
Name the storm.
Yeah, no. How's Bobby's Snow MG thing catching on?
I don't think it really caught on.
No.
I don't know. I haven't heard anybody say that or read it online.
When you said Snow MG, I thought it was some sort of a hip-hop name.
Oh, I can see that.
Which I guess makes me sound like an old person, but I didn't really know. Or it was I thought he was maybe riffing on the name of a car or something. All right. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program coming to you from high above the Milkpacking District here in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. Thank you for drawing near on this Thursday. It is February 24th, 2011, and welcome to Day 12. If you'd like to get a hold of us today electronically, you can do that. It's rick@rickemerson.com, rick@rickemerson.com. Don Taylor can be emailed as well. That is Don, D-A-W-N, Don.
Indeed.
@rickemerson.com. Text box on the website open. Also, you can message us via Skype if you'd like. That is all one word. It is Rick Emerson Show via Skype. And then if you want to call, you could do that, I guess. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. A Skype message just says, "You guys are made of fists and guts." What does that mean?
Thank you,
I
guess. That sounds tough.
Yeah, I guess it sounds like it's a positive trait.
Yeah.
It's a good description. It's something that rings in my ears as a compliment, but who knows? Okay, I guess thank you, sir. It's 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. If you would like to weigh in with your comments, questions, clarifications, observations. Is there something on the chair that's distracting you?
No, I'm just looking around.
Are you just doing that thing where you're just sort of staring blankly into space today for no readily apparent reason?
No, just looking around. I remembered you were going to tell me about the snack item that you were enjoying earlier, and I wondered if like the wrapper was lying around somewhere, and so I was looking for it.
So you could smell the inside where the food once was.
Because I'm like a dog that way.
Give me the paper towels.
I saw something tasty several hours ago. Maybe it's still here.
Was it you with whom I was having the? I've reached that point today. Let me just stop.
Okay.
All right. So right before we went on the air with Legion of News this morning, we were here, I don't know, maybe like 11:50, 11:45, and you said something like, "If I should seem ever so slightly off today," and then you said that you were basically up all night chain puking.
Kind of, yeah.
And that it slept really badly, and that your brain was feeling a little wonky and wobbly. Mm-hmm. And that if it was just one of those days where I said, "What do you think about that, Dawn?" And you went, you know, just or just said, like, you know, bubbles for no reason, that like I shouldn't think you were drugged up. I mean,
yeah,
any more than normal. That it was just you were feeling a little off kilter, or that it was possible you would feel off kilter.
It's possible, yeah, because my brain actually seems okay. You know, we did the first show. I think the Legion of News went well.
Went well.
And I feel pretty much on the mark. It's just that I'm having that aftermath of being really sick, like, and then not sleeping like half the night because I was up at like 2:30 in the morning being ill in every horrific way you can possibly imagine. And so I'm just feeling that kind of aftermath of that. And I'm sure everyone listening knows what I'm talking about. That thing where you just feel weak and trembly like a newborn kitten.
No, and it's because you've been taxing your muscles, but with the puking and the whatever else.
Yeah.
Where your body's just like, "We're going to get all of this out right now."
And plus you're getting over being poisoned.
Yeah.
So you just kind of feel like, ugh.
Now, I don't think I've ever had food poisoning. I mean, I guess, is it something that you would know that you had, or would you just think like, "Oh, it's a 24-hour bug"?
Right.
Which I know you say that there are no 24-hour bugs. It's probably food poisoning. But I mean, is it different than having like the flu?
Well, yeah.
Does it feel different?
It actually can feel very much like having the flu. You can have a fever. It's a bacterial infection in your blood. It is very similar to having the flu. It just lasts a very short time, just until you get it out of your system.
I just wonder if that's a thing that I've had and I just didn't know it.
I'm sure you have. If you've had like what they call flu-like symptoms,
yeah,
like you know vomiting, diarrhea, that stuff, and it's only lasted
diarrhea.
If it's lasted somewhere between like just a few hours and like a day. You had food poisoning. You had food poisoning.
That's the sort of thing that shouldn't have made me laugh.
Vomiting, diarrhea.
Have you had symptoms like vomiting, diarrhea?
No, that would be bad. But yeah, and for some reason, these things always hit you like late at night. Like, la-da-da, having a good time. Oh, you know, about 10 o'clock at night going, "Oh, I'm starting to not feel so good. Oh."
You get a low rumbling sensation.
Yeah, 11 o'clock going to bed going, "Man, I really don't feel good." And then just like waking up an hour later and going, "Oh, my Lord."
Yeah.
And then, of course, the person you live with going, "You're making my life hell. I'm just trying to sleep. I'm not sick." You're like, "I'm sorry." And they're in the next room trying to sleep.
Laura and I have this sort of You hear about couples sometimes saying they have an understanding, an arrangement. Here's the arrangement we have. The understanding that Laura and I have is that, it's sort of an unspoken thing, but I think we know it's there. That if one of us, has, like if somebody comes down with the ailment where, again, you're vomiting diarrhea, or, you know, what, or whatever. But if you have some, I don't know, a problem where, you know, there's some sort of an uncontrollable substance evacuation happening with your body, that the other one goes, hey, I just noticed we're out of milk. I'm going to go to the store for like 4 hours and maybe return those over to library books. Whittle a stick somewhere, and I'll be back tonight at like 8. Because it's awkward and uncomfortable enough being sick. Whereas you said you're just like Stan Marsh's dad, and it's just out both ends in the bathroom or something. You're just like, oh, my life sucks. This is terrible. You know, and just bad. But then it's like the knowledge that the person who shares your bed is on the other side of a thin door.
Yeah.
And like, unless you live like at Xanadu, I mean, they can hear what's going on. If it's vomiting or whatever else. That lie you to, oh, run the tap slightly. So there's no hiding. I mean,
No, in this case, and now I live in an apartment as well. So I'm just thinking, God, I bet the people who live upstairs just hate me right now. Because I'm in the bathroom right off the master bedroom, which means I'm directly under their bathroom, which is right off of their master bedroom, at 2:30 in the morning.
Man's trying to make sweet love to his woman, and he hears your breakfast splattering on the inside of the toilet.
Well, we have the thing. Now, when we first got together, the first time I got sick, which I believe was off of tequila, when Patrick and I were first seeing each other, he was so concerned and wanted to help and came into the bathroom. I was like, go away!
Leave!
Go away, leave!
I'm hideous!
And now it's like, 11 years later, now he stands outside the door and he goes, if you need anything, you let me know there.
But I got to get in there at some point. I got to brush my hair before work.
And then after just this horrible, horrible event that he's been hearing, I leave the bathroom. I come staggering back into the bedroom. And I sort of got this. Is what he says. He goes, did you spray? That's it. That's all he cares about. No. Did I spray the air freshener after, my horrific
I thought he was using it as a euphemism.
No, he was asking if I had if I'd sprayed the air freshener
so
that it's less unpleasant for him.
Okay. All right. No,
that's later.
No, I understand. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. Actually, either of them would make sense, but that also is a consideration.
Yeah.
Because you don't. And then that's the other thing is like, I'm not trying to start the show up by just talking about a bunch of horrific things that come from the depths of one's body, but I mean, and that other fiction, it's a thing. You know what it is? It's sort of like, it's like an Emperor's New Clothes thing, but it's like everybody's new clothes, where we pretend that whatever that stuff you sits all over the bathroom, that, you know, like you go into, like, well, there's cinnamon and sandalwood. That'll cover the sound of my 9-hour diarrhea bout. It'll cover the smell. I mean, it's like you're just in a rendering plant where somebody has just hung a pine needle tree or something. There's really no. So you're in the bathroom and you're sick and like the other person's out there and I just don't want to, So Laura and I have this whole thing is somebody's ill, like the other one just goes like, I'm going to go fishing or whatever and just leaves. And you come back hours later and hopefully everything is sort of, everything has resolved itself. Well, in the past when I've gotten those things, for some reason it always tends, it's like an hour before the show. Which means then you're at your place of business or something. And you have said that you have difficulty performing certain bodily functions at the office or like in public.
I have tried to arrange my life so that I never have to do that one particular thing in a shared restroom.
But then it's that thing where your body's just giving you like no choice,
right?
You know, and it's like, I'm sorry, look, the wheels are off, the brakes are off the train.
Everybody out of the pool.
Yeah, and you're just going like, oh, crap. I actually worked with a guy who was so neurotic about that. That he would, it didn't matter how close to showtime he was, he would get in his car and he would speed home.
As long as you live fairly close to work, I suppose that would.
And it's like, once a year it would work out to where, like, you know, like the opening show music would be starting and it's like the phone would ring and it would, you know, it would be like, we'll call him Bob. And he would just be like, all right, it's me, I had to go home to poop, I'll be there in like 2 minutes. Which is the sort of phone call you don't get at most places. And the producer's like, all right, I'll just run the theme music longer. Fine. Whatever. So,
I also have this new thing now where I do this with you every single day. And so I have this other consideration that's like 2:30 in the morning. And I've just had this horrific bout of like vomiting. And my throat is horribly sore. And I'm just miserable sitting there. And then I'm thinking, oh, God, I hope I didn't strain my vocal cords. Because I have the sense, the last few years I've noticed this has started happening, that if I do throw up, it will be like with it's not a particularly common occurrence. And when it does happen, it is with such a violence that I actually sometimes strain my vocal cords for a couple of days. And then I can't. My voice is horrible for like about a day and a half. And so I'm saying they're just shivering and miserable and in pain and horrible thinking, I hope I'll be able to talk on the radio.
Must be able to use pithy epigrams on radio show.
Well, and also you're bathing your vocal cords in acid every time you vomit. So there's that too. You got that working for you.
And yet, here I am.
No, you're in perfect voice, Dawn. Yeah. This is all by way of just saying, so you mentioned this at the beginning of Legion of News, and I feel like it's, you actually sound fine. I feel like it's catching a little bit on this side of the table where, like, I'll just go to find a word for, you know, I'll go to, like, look for the word jello, and it's just gone. My mental dictionary is just blank. It's like there's a back in 5 minutes sign hanging on that page of my brain.
It's the Snowlandia thing. Okay. There's still a big cloud of retardation hanging over the studio because we were talking about the Snowlandia put a bird on it.
It's like we broke some sort of mongoloid seventh seal, and it's just sort of like stupidity has flowed forth like the River Ganges. So I'm looking at the logo. I guess I will post it. I guess I'll do it now. I don't really because so Cheryl sent it to me last night, and we were talking last night about how she was giving me this concert. Series of updates about, oh my God, they're bumping Oprah. Oh my God, they're standing outside. There's no snow. Oh my God, they're pointing at bare ground where they think snow might eventually be. And as somebody noted, they bumped Oprah on KGW yesterday, which is there's real money involved there, and it didn't even goddamn snow until the middle of the night. I mean, they bumped Oprah, which is at 4 p.m., and yet, like, the snow actually didn't come down until, I don't know, like 2 a.m. or something. Because I went to bed at around 3 in the morning, and there was still no snow on the ground. And it did. I mean, there was snow when I woke up, but it wasn't there at 3 a.m.
We were starting to get a little bit when I went to bed the first time last night at 11 in Tualatin. And we're at a higher elevation, so we get it a little bit sooner than it shows up, you know, down here in the city. But, you know, but again, it was like a few flakes just kind of coming down.
Yeah. No, it's ridiculous.
And it's all melted and gone now.
That was the other thing, is I woke up and I'm like, oh, what do you know? There's snow. And then it's like I went and I, like, you know, showered and brushed my teeth and, like, fed the dogs, came back. Snow, gone. Somebody's asking where I'm going to post the Snowlandia logo. I'll post that here in just a few. So Cheryl said this to me last night. She said, oh, my God, look at this thing that KGW's done. And I clicked on it. It was the thing where I somehow thought up until the very last moment it was going to be something else because I couldn't imagine that they would actually spend time. I mean, it's just firing people by the dozens over at that place, I think. And yet some poor sap, some fool, some guy who probably went to art school, it was his job last night, like drawing Timmy the Turtle, just to sit there and come up with a Snowlandia logo, which I then sent to you with sort of a dark glee in my heart. So there you go. I'll post it. Yeah, I didn't put it up on Twitter last night because I thought, like, really, is this... I almost felt like I would be abusing the internet, you know? I almost felt like it would be sort of like making your child carry a big, heavy backpack when you go out camping.
And you're also spreading the virus of stupid to other people. No, because everyone who sees this, and I want to warn you, if you do go and take a look at this, it will make you stupider just looking at it.
No, it'll eat your bones and your soul. Here's what's coming up today. We got your Taser Watch coming up. Also, Corpse Watch will have clue number 4 of the EH Vending Name That Snack Contest. And there's a clue number 4 in the EH Vending Name That Snack Contest brought to you by EH Vending. Find out more about them by going to ehvending.com. What else? Another installment of the greatest songs ever made. We'll recap last night's episode of Justified, which was awesome. We'll talk a bit about Breaking Bad. We'll do that. Maybe we might actually do that first. We'll do that here in just a bit because that's one of those things that it is both timely and not. Because on the one hand, we've been teasing it for a few days, and I also want to get it sort of talked about because you're in season 2 of Breaking Bad. And I don't know if you're going to be caught up by the time they launch season 4, but I think season 4 rolls out maybe the second week of March, something like that. It's like it's somewhere in March. Because they're double fisting it right now on AMC. They're doing 2 episodes every Wednesday back to back. So they're basically powering through all 3 seasons because they want to get it done by the time March rolls around. So talk about that. And Dawn Taylor is tracking the following headlines for you on this fine Thursday.
A vocational teacher is shot to death in front of his students. Arizona is voting on whether or not they need an official firearm. And the Army apparently used psychological manipulation on U.S. senators.
Wait, when you say an official firearm, do you mean like how, you know, like how like the painted daisy is their official flower?
Yeah, like the state bird, they'll have a state firearm.
All right. Well, fair enough. Hey, what is the state flower of Oregon?
I don't know.
I don't really care. It's just one of those things that it never occurred to me until just this very moment that we even had one. But we probably do.
Yeah, we do. We have a bird and a flower and an animal and all of those things. I assume the animal is the beaver.
Probably. All right.
But...
All right. This is all true. It's 503-505-6964. Yes, Don Taylor?
I was going to say, if you go to KGW's website and you go to their, click on weather and go to the weather site, you can actually see the videotape of meteorologist Nick Allard standing in Pioneer Courts House Square talking about the snow. And, of course, there is no snow anywhere to be seen.
So just gesticulating at where he thinks the snow might be in some alternate rendering of this world.
Right.
Okay. That's awesome. Apparently, there was a... apparently, they had... I don't know if it was KGW, although I'm assuming it was. But they have the thing where it's... outside, they have... It's like a ruler that they have sort of put into the ground, and they've made a little ad hoc sort of like how many inches of snow are there. It's like a little flower box, basically, like a garden box. And they've stuck a ruler into it, so at any point they could just sort of cut to that, and it would be like, as you can see, we are now up to the 4-inch mark or whatever. And apparently every time they would just say like, and we're right now awaiting a blizzard, which is going to bury Portland in... And that, like, the guy who was running the switching board would just cut to the shot of the measuring stick, and it was bare. There's nothing there. literally nothing. It was just empty. And he would say, we are awaiting Blizzard Blizzard 2011. And then they would just cut to just like a bad Family Guy gag of just this, like, empty box with nothing in it.
Tumbleweed rolls by.
I have now, hold on, what should I caption this? Snowlandia.
I don't know.
Caption it, Jesus Christ.
Christ is good. Just derf.
It is. All right, there we go. Awesome. All right, that is it. RickEmerson.com/pictures. You go to Visual Aids for February 24th, 2011. That is RickEmerson.com/pictures. Visual Aids, February 24th, 2011. You can see all of that. See all of that there. All right. Speaking of a snack that I was eating earlier, here's the thing. My shame is that, like, between Legion of News and this show, I had half of it left. I'd consumed half, and then I was going to save half of it so you could try it, and then that didn't so much happen as it was okay. Consumed by me.
That's fine. I almost bought a dark Snickers bar at the store today when I bought my Vizo, and then I realized that what with everything that happened last night, I probably shouldn't be eating candy.
I don't really care for the dark Snickers bar. The dark chocolate Snickers is not all that. I find it to be a little bit off putting. It has the edge of bitterness to it. I don't really care for the dark chocolate Kit Kat you brought though. Now that's fantastic. That's quite something. That's some good eating is what that is. The thing I had here's, you know, the company that has had the most spin-off products recently in terms of candy. There's two. There's M&M's because they got like 9 different flavors of M&M's now. Also, did you know this? Did you know if...
You still haven't brought me those pretzel M&M's.
No, I haven't. I got to put up my planner. Here's the thing. This is one of the great... this just seems like one of the great abominations and apostasies of recent times. Did you know if you buy a thing of, like, Whitman's chocolates now, you no longer get the little legend, the little map inside that shows you what's what?
No.
What the hell is that about?
No, that's part of the deal.
Yeah, there was a box of them in the kitchen the other day. It was like a little heart-shaped thing of the Whitman's whatever. And it's, like, even the decorative ones, even the ones that you would get for, like, your holiday, for Christmas or for, Valentine's Day, there'd be, like, a little thing inside the lid that would tell you what was what. Here's the other thing about that. Here's the two things about Whitman's sampler. First of all, no, third of all, they're now only one layer. It used to be 2 levels of chocolate in a Whitman sampler because you would look at the little, the little graph and you'd say like, okay, I got to steer around the cherry cordial, got to avoid this coconut thing right here and also the praline and go right for the double chocolate inside chocolate fudge. And then you go for that. You don't have that anymore. Now it's just trial and error. And also, it's just the one layer of chocolates. Now, I know that we're living in a recession and all, but still, that seems like it should be sacrosanct. It seems like that's the thing that should be inviolable.
We always, I was never a big fan of the Whitman's chocolates because I don't think they're really very good chocolate. But when I was a kid growing up, they were very common in my house because we had this big old house with an apartment that my grandmother lived in on one end. And my grandmother had this horrible habit that she would do that if there was a box of assorted chocolates, she would pick them up and then gouge the bottom of it with her fingernail to see what the filling was. And if it was something she didn't like, she'd stick it back in the box with the fingernail, gouge out of the bottom of it. So my mom would only bring like the Whitman samplers into the house because if you got the See's candy, there'd always be grandma's fingernail gouges in them. Whereas the Whitman sampler had the little legend, so Grandma knew what she was getting.
Grandma's fingernail gouge, it sounds like the worst home recipe, like the worst remedy for something I've ever heard. Well, what you need is a jar of Grandma's good old-fashioned fingernail gouge.
You can imagine my grandmother, who is this sort of...
These fake, long old lady fingernails?
Well, they weren't fake. My grandmother had her nails done regularly and went to the parlor and did this stuff. But Grandma sitting there with, like, her Manhattan or her rum and coke, like, at her elbow, smoking a cigarette, pulling the candy out of the See's candy, gouging it with her fingernail and going, I don't like coconut, and sticking it back in the box.
Awesome. Could she tell just by sight, or did she actually have to, like, go and give it a sniff, or could she just tell?
I think she could just tell. She'd, like, look at it and go, cherry. I don't like the cherry creams or whatever.
She's like one of Wonka's nut-sorting squirrels.
Yeah, exactly.
Right down the incinerator.
And it drove my mother crazy, because my mother would then go to the candy. Of course, the first thing my mom would do would pick it up and look at the bottom to see if Grandma had been there before.
So
she's like,
gross.
And she'd be like, damn it, Mom!
So disgusting. I know that we're all over the map. You know what? And you know what I almost Twittered last night at like 1 a.m. and then I didn't because it's the sort of idiotic thing that people shouldn't Twitter, but they always do. Last night around 1 a.m. I was taking a little break between two things and I actually very nearly just, I nearly Twittered, oh God, it's Thursday. You know, what hell awaits me Thursday?
Right.
Because that's the thing is I can
That's
even,
your squirrely day.
In my head, I can just sense that I'm just all over, I haven't even finished the Whitman sampler thing and I'm already onto something else. So there's the Whitman sampler. My third thing about the Whitman sampler, before we move on, is I don't get... It's a sampler of what? Like, is there a Whitman's, like... Is somewhere, is there a mythical Whitman's box that's nothing but coconut? And one that's nothing but pralines? And one that's nothing but cherry cordials? It's a sampler, which means that it is a representative microcosm of a larger selection of products that can be purchased individually.
It's possible, though, that originally the Whitman's company, like, they were confectioners and maybe they had a store... And you could come in and you could buy a pound of this or a half pound of that. And then perhaps they started out with individual boxes. But when they did the Whitman's sampler, again, we can look into this later for Pop Culture Authority. But it could have been that actually ended up becoming like their most popular product.
The biggest product.
To the point that that's what became mass produced. And also, I remember feeling so clever the day as a child that I figured out the whole concept, too, that the Whitman sampler, that it was a sampler of many different kinds of chocolates. And the top of the box was designed to look like a needlework sampler.
Is that what that's called? I had no idea.
Yes. When people are first learning to do needlepoint, or needlework and cross-stitch, yeah. you'll do like these little things, and they're called samplers. And they're very small, and they're done basically for
like
your
training
your beginning practice stuff. And they
I had
often
no
have
idea.
Like the they'll often have like the alphabet on them and things like that because you're learning.
That's interesting. I had no idea.
Yeah.
Is the women's sampler one of those things that's authentically old?
I think it is.
Because you see one of those, like, since 1829,
yeah,
and you always assume it's a lie.
I believe it is. I believe Whitman's has been doing that for a very, very long time. Because I know that, I don't know, because they were around when I was a kid, and my mom seemed to imply that she'd been, like, buying them since she was a youth. So I think they've been around, like, forever.
We should go get penny candy and whorehound.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. My mom loved her whorehound.
I don't even know what whorehound is. I know it's a thing that the kids ate in Where the Red Fern Grows.
Yeah, and it's horrible.
It's like a horrible licorice-y thing?
Yeah, it's kind of medicinal. Well, it was one of those things like licorice that it was medicinal originally, and that's why it was sold. And but, oh, God, it is a nasty, weird, bitter, acrid kind of a flavor. And yeah, I think we talked about this before. The only place that, when I was a child, by the time I was a kid, only place that ever sold it that we knew of, in Southern California anyway, was in the candy shop at Disneyland on Main Street.
Yeah.
So every time I went to Disneyland, I had to get my mom would slip me some money so I would buy her whorehound.
It's like one of those, but the past sucks. It's like everything in the past that was supposed to be good for you was just horrible. You know, it was like, watch this, like that, you know, you think about like going into and sitting at the fountain and getting like a malted or something. But I mean, that's a relatively recent thing. 100 years ago, you go to soda and it's like giving you a bottle of that Moxie, which is just terrible. Moxie, which just tastes like dirt and gasoline.
I've never had Moxie.
It's awful. Moxie is terrible.
Folks in the South love it.
You know who else drinks it is folks in New England. And so Tim Riley was actually talking, because I was, you know, one of the things where I said, well, like what? I said, is Moxie a real thing, you know, or is it just like a phrase? And Tim was like, no, I've had many bottles of Moxie in my life. I said, really? Do you like it? No. But it was a thing that it was always stocked at the Riley household, apparently. And I said, I said, do they still sell it? And he said, oh, yes, they do. Every time I go back home to New England. And it's like his family, he goes back home to Nashua, home of Josiah Bartlett. And his, like, you open the fridge, and there's some Moxie. And so he actually, somebody either sent it or he bought it online. But he, at some point, we got, like, a six-pack of Moxie. And it, the bottle is great because it's totally unchanged. On the front is a guy in like a white doctor's coat, like ladling some Moxie into a bottle because it was considered to be like an all-purpose curative. You know, it was like one of those like pick-me-up sort of like elixirs that probably just had morphine in it. Their whole big selling point is that the recipe of Moxie, for all intents and purposes, is unchanged from like 1805 or something. And Tim warned me. He's like, it's terrible. It's like, you don't, it's like, this is awful. He says, it's a terrible thing. I don't know why we drink it. And I can attest that it is, in fact, awful.
It's the kombucha of its time.
It's so bad. It's just an acrid horror that's been jammed into a bottle. But it's a thing that people still, it's like fluffernutter. It's one of those things that people just continue to consume. And you think, like, why? What is up with that?
Another terrible soda that has a great bottle is Green River.
Don't knock Green River.
Oh, it just tastes like that horrible fake lime flavor.
I don't know. I haven't had Green River since I was a kid, so I probably wouldn't like it now.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, it was...
It's not good.
It was fascinating, though. That was the thing about Green River when I was a kid, is because it was... This is strange, actually, now that I think about it. We're so off track. I'm not even going to pretend that we're... We don't have anybody coming in today. F them. By the way, somebody just says, oh, no, I live in Tigard, and it's actually snowing. It says KGW will be on my lawn in moments. I just know it. This is actually weird now that I think about it. Thinking back to my grandmother's house, right? I kind of got dumped at my grandmother's a lot when I was growing up. And she had divorced my grandfather. They'd split up. I think maybe... I don't know if this was related to all of those sex photos that we eventually discovered once she died. What was my point? So they had divorced, and she just never, like... Like, she pretty much just lived in, like, one room of the house. I mean, she would wake up, she'd go to the kitchen, get some Sanka, and she'd go out to the living room, and she would sit in her chair for the rest of the day and watch soap operas and stain the roof above her chair, the ceiling above her chair, with cigarette smoke. And then she'd go back to bed. And that was
it. She was living the dream.
Yeah, she never... Like,
and I don't mean that in an ironic way.
She does. I mean, really,
that's what I look forward to spending my golden years doing.
She was clearly an imprint on me early. I mean, she was an archetype for how I would live my life. But the rest of the house, she never went into. The rest of the house, I mean, 75% of the house, she probably never set foot in the rest of her life because it was all my grandfather's stuff. And she just didn't, you know, there was no need. And so all of his stuff was still there because when he moved out, I get the feeling that their divorce or his leaving was sort of hurried because, like, all of his crap was still there. And he lived for another 30 years, and he never went back for any of it. And they only lived, like, a mile from each other. And he never went back for any of his stuff, ever. It was, like, literally, there was, like, shaving cream of his in the bathroom that she just never threw. It was just still there.
I can understand that, though. It took my parents had a very acrimonious divorce, and it took, like, 3 years before he got up the courage to actually come home and one day when she wasn't there and get me to get his fishing gear out of the garage.
Yeah, because you were just like, you know, you're just like, you're out. Why put yourself back into the lake of fire? She had two refrigerators, and she had a refrigerator in the kitchen, and then there was like a refrigerator in the back. I got the feeling that even when they were together, they lived sort of a separate but equal. They had like a very Brown versus the Board of Education kind of existence, where he had his life and she had hers, and they happened to be in the same house because there was duplicates of everything. Like there was a fridge that belonged to him, and there was a fridge that belonged to her, and then there was like you know, he had his room where he watched TV, she had her room where she watched TV. You know, it's like everything in the house, like there was a little like cooking stove in like the back room where like he, you know, where he would, you know, sit and like refill his like, you know, his ammunition and then apparently make Hungry Man TV dinners. So it was very strange. But the fridge was just as he had left it. And when I was a kid, I would go visit. And if it was like really hot outside or something, I would open my grandfather's fridge. And the fridge was just filled with two things. It was filled with beer of whatever variety, which didn't interest me when I was a kid. And it was filled with Green River soda. And the Green River soda was completely fascinating to me because it was a green soda that you didn't really have anyway.
Yeah.
Tasted like lime, which you never had. And then also it was a bottle, which was cooler than a can or a pull top or anything. It was a bottle. And then it had the cool drawing on the front that was painted on. Mm. So as a kid, I consumed that. But I don't actually know if I liked it.
It sounds like a great idea. And then, yeah, I was an adult when I finally had one. I was eating lunch at one of those sort of retro places, sort of like in Pulp Fiction with like, hey, it's the 50s. It's a diner. It's crazy. We're all dressed like car hops. You know, this place in L.A. And they had all of these wacky kind of retro sodas. And so I had the Green River. And it was just awful. Yeah. It was just like somebody had melted down a bunch of green lifesavers, you know, and it was so sweet. It was so just syrupy sweet.
There's a lot of those sodas. Like, there's that, what is the other soda? There's that soda, it's the name of a gum as well, but I believe there's a soda called a Big Red. And I think Big Red was like a strawberry soda.
Yeah.
It was like a strawberry crush almost, but it was unbelievably sweet.
Yeah.
To the point that I think it probably only existed for people in the South to put in their gin. Like, it was just one of those things that, like, a guy sitting on his front porch, you know, watching the grass grow would just, like, dump it into his, you know, into his bottle of hooch or whatever. All right. Yeah, I am now required as a pop culture enthusiast to note that blah, 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 Green River, the inspiration for the CCR song of the same name, blah, blah, blah. Let's see. One final observation. This is just back on the thing of your grandmother gouging out the bottoms of Whitman samplers and See's candy samplers. Here's something that is sort of gross that you don't really think about, and yet that we all as a society have decided to turn a blind eye to. I was thinking about this last night. You know, here's the thing: is for a bunch of germaphobes, and I'm not like a freakish anti-germ guy. Like, I don't wash my hands 1,000 times a day or something. But you know, I try not to be filthy. You know what I'm about to...
You're a clean man. You're tidy.
I wash my hands after I touch something that I think might be foul in some way. I try not to offend with my personal stench or anything. So it's like I try not to, you know, just be gross. But, you know, here's the thing that we, as a society, we just seem to have no problem with. When you're in a kitchen and you're sampling the soup to see if it needs more cumin and you're just slurping it out of a metal spoon or a wooden spoon that the guy then just puts back in and starts stirring with.
Yeah.
Not like I care, but don't you think that's a thing that by now... we as a society would have gotten a tight ass about?
Well, it's interesting that we, as somebody who, like, has cooked professionally, there are a whole lot of health and safety rules that you have for working in a kitchen because you're making food for somebody else and you don't want to get sued because someone gets sick or what have you. And people get so crazy about, like, food. Like, they get food poisoning, like I had last night, and their first instinct is to blame whatever the last meal was they had.
Right.
And that's generally not true. Most food poisoning takes at least 24 hours to incubate in your bloodstream. Some take as much as 36 or 48 hours. But you're most likely looking at what you ate 24 hours ago. And secondly, we think that food in kitchens should be made under, like, sort of NASA astronaut space...
An Intel clean room.
Yeah, like an Intel clean room. And they actually do as good of a job as they can when you consider they're being cooked. Yes, food is being cooked by people. Like most professional kitchens, you'll have a box of disposable spoons.
Right.
And if you're taste, because you have to taste food as you go along, but you taste it with the tasting spoons and then you toss it in the trash. You don't eat slurp off the one big spoon. But the thing is, when we're at home, which is probably where most food poisoning comes
right.
from. Yeah, everybody in the house is eating off the same spoon, and you're drinking out of the milk carton, and you drop something on the floor, and you pick it up, and you eat it. And people, like, you know, cut raw chicken on the counter, and then, like, don't ever wipe it down with bleach or anything.
Yeah.
And raw chicken is, like, toxic.
Yeah.
And they'll use the same cutting board for raw meat that they use for their vegetables. And then, it's the last restaurant that they ate at that is
right.
why they got sick.
Man, I gotta tell you, it's not like I'm some sort of a roadmap for, like, you know, I'm no Julia Child or nothing, but I, you know, my mom, you know, she did a lot of, my mom cooked a lot of our stuff and made a lot of our stuff from scratch, and which I didn't appreciate when I was young. But, you know, Laura grew up in a house where everything came out of a can or a package. Everything was from a restaurant. Like, her parents, they never did any sort of home cooking. And so when she finally discovered that she was interested in that, when she discovered later in life, just a few years back, that she really enjoyed cooking, she kind of had no baseline for, she just didn't ever see that, and so she had no baseline for how you were supposed to treat a kitchen or operate in a kitchen. And I did, just because, again, you know, my mom was very traditional in that way. And the first time I saw, I walked into the kitchen, and Lara's like, you know, she's like chopping up like raw chicken or something to put in like, you know, a pan. And then I came back like 7 seconds later, and she's chopping like the lettuce for the salad on the same cutting board. And I just, you know, did that, you know, because then it's like you just wonder how long she's been doing that. Like, did she do that last night? The night before? When was the last time this cutting board was in fact cleaned with anything other than a paper towel, like, wiped over the surface of it? So, Jesus. All right, let's see. Well, that's it. And that was a stupid observation of mine anyway. So.
Well, whenever you have a moment, I have a little bit of breaking news.
Oh, is it really? Is it exciting?
It is actually exciting.
Hold
breaking
on a
news.
Breaking news. Hold on a second. Let me just... Now, why would I have gotten rid of the breaking news sounder? Hold on a second.
No.
Now it's become a whole thing. I got to find it. So, anyway.
Well, if you need to, you could always just do it with your mouth.
Like
I don't know if that does
really. It'll any moment now, I'll find it. Hold on. Well, now it's become a whole thing.
Yeah.
Mutual. Wait, 1 second. I'll have it in like 5 seconds here.
Okay.
Any moment. It's, no, wait. You know, I'd replaced it with the stupidest thing. This is what I'd replaced it with. Why would I do that?
That works for breaking news, but just not in the same way.
God damn. Looks like today you won't be seeing your episode of Snopra. Sorry. All right, here's your...
There we go.
Here's Don Taylor with your breaking news.
Space Shuttle Discovery has finally blasted off on its final voyage. 6 astronauts are on board the world's most traveled spaceship. They're headed for the International Space Station after a 4-month delay for fuel tank repairs. This is Discovery's 39th and final mission. It's the first of the 3 space shuttles to be retired this year. No other spacecraft has been launched more times. Tens of thousands witnessed history in the making from the Florida launch site. Countless more watched from surrounding towns. Roads leading into Kennedy Space Center were jammed. Discovery should reach the space station on Saturday. It will deliver a compartment full of supplies as well as the first humanoid robot to fly in space.
The first humanoid robot.
The first humanoid robot. Yeah, that's the one that I think that's the one
that walks around and high-fives you in the hallway.
That's nice to them and monitors their stuff and gives them hugs or something.
Nice to them now.
Yeah.
All right, there you go.
It's not the stabby robot.
Here's your breaking news for...
Oh, no, we accidentally set up the stabby humanoid robot.
Damn it. All right. So forth. It's 503-505-6964. I have nothing else to say about anything. Let me see if it's snowing out. Oh, goddamn. Now there's like tiny flakes of snow outside.
Snowing now.
Well, sort of. I mean, the thing, maybe it is, or maybe it's just blowing around
snow
that was here earlier.
No, that's definitely new snow coming down.
All right. I have no other observations about the weather, except that, well, I already mentioned this to you, that I had to do that thing of, like, basically shoving Philo off the porch today because he was just terrified of, because the ground looked slightly different, and so he was, you know, just sitting there just vibrating with fear on the couch.
You probably can't put him in boots and a little jacket because he would just be traumatized, I guess.
Lara, because, you know, Lara had, like, 3 years in a row trying to dress Max up for Halloween, and she kept thinking, God love my wife, she's one of the smartest people I know, but... You know, here's the thing. That's not an always thing. That proposition is sort of dicey occasionally. She had 3 years in a row of trying to put Max in Halloween costumes, and she kept thinking that the problem was the costume. It was weird because she was simultaneously really smart and really stupid all at once. She was trying to solve the problem and analyzing all of the variables that might be causing this failure of Max to keep the costume on. But then she always arrived at... Maybe he didn't care for the costume, and a different costume would be more to his liking.
Mm.
Which, I mean, I know he's an evil genius. He's a dog. He's got a brain like a pea.
Yeah.
He doesn't know. It's just you're sticking crap onto his head. So it's like we have in our closet at home, so we have a pirate costume for a tiny poodle. We have a witch costume for a tiny poodle. We have a Frankenstein costume for a tiny poodle. We have like a gypsy costume for a tiny poodle. None of these things work because she would just put it on and he would just, and the whole time he was sitting there, and the one thing that Max will really do is if you say like, sit, stay, he'll stay. He does really, really well at that because he thinks that there's food at the end of the line for it. Like he thinks that you're going to pay it off with some kibble. So if you say sit, stay, he will. And he'll tolerate anything. Like you can put flea treatment on him. We have to stick this crap in his ears every now and again, like to clean him out. He'll tolerate that. Like you can just jab him with a needle, you know, at the vet if you need to. Like if you say sit, stay, he'll sit and he'll stay. But he'll give you that eyeball of like, this had better be worth it. Like I'm tolerating this, but you're going to, Max deserves a little something at the end of this. Like you can make it worth my while. And it's like she'll say, sit, stay, and then she'll just start lacing up. She'll start putting like a gypsy hat on him and tying it underneath his chin. And he's just giving her a look of what Ken Kesey would call a look of the cleanest hate you ever did see. And it's like he's just looking at her like, you are a horrible human being and I will kill you in your sleep. And then as soon as we would let him go, he would immediately just go like, yeah, and just pull the costume off and then run away. And then the next year she'd be like, well, a different costume he might like more. How about Karate Kid? You know, and whatever. And so you can't do that with Philo because you put it on and he just sits there and just trembles and vibrates with fear. And then I just feel so bad I take it off of him.
The fun thing about putting costumes on cats, I've noticed, is that they just fall over. If you put on anything on a cat, there are two things the cat will try to do. One is if you wrap something around a cat's waist, it will try to back out of it. So you have, so which is hilarious because then the cat is just walking around the room backwards. That's always fun. And the other thing is, if you put a cat in like a full costume, most cats, because they don't want to be in whatever it is, they will just go limp. They just fall down. That's
Massive
it. They just go no.
They just can't. They can't deal
like,
with
come
it.
Come on, Kitty. Come on. Look, you're dressed like a bunny. This will be awesome. The cat goes no. Just flops down on its sides and just stares at
goes
you.
Goes into sleep mode.
Yeah. Like no.
It's like a Chinese protester just going just you
exactly.
know bag of sand.
It's like yeah no. This is all you get. It's like okay.
The idea of backing out of the thing is sort of funny, especially because cats are pretty smart, but there's certain things they just can't quite process. I had a friend of mine, cat would not do, you know, dogs chase their tail. The cat wouldn't chase the tail. The cat would chase the shadow of the tail. Not the tail itself, because I would sit and I would watch, and it was like you could tell the cat was actually chasing the shadow of its tail, which was really, really weird. And, you know, and they, like, you think that they would eventually figure it out. They would put two and two together, but it never happened. Ever, ever, ever.
My cat has actually just started playing with toys and playing with things and being playful. And the cat is, like, five. The cat has been the most bored and boring animal ever for, like 4.5 years of life. Playful, adorable kitten, then got out of the kitten years, and then it was like, okay.
I'm done.
I'm just going to be here in this room sleeping now all the time. Like, come out in the living room. No, I'm on the bed. That's where I live now. And now all of a sudden, just like the last couple of months, the cat has been like, hey, let me chase things. Hey, I want to play with you. Patrick walks in the room. She loves Patrick. And Patrick walks in the room. He's like, meow, meow, meow. Gets up on her hind legs, bats at him, play with me. And we're like, you're five. Where is this coming from?
Well, maybe it's how long do cats live? Is this sort of a midlife crisis?
It could be. They live to be about like 12 or something.
Yeah, so
yeah.
Maybe it's like, oh, you know, I have to make up for the excitement that I missed out on these past few
maybe.
Years.
Maybe. We have no idea why she's just suddenly become like more. She comes out in the living room now, hangs out in the living room, then goes back in the. Like, I don't know why.
Oh, hey, apropos of nothing, I don't know why this just occurred to me. Here's a statement you don't hear very often. I have those wire coat hangers you asked me to give you.
Oh, okay. I'll take it.
I don't know if you already found one, but
I fashioned something. The reason you were going to give me the wire coat hangers, not for the reason people may think, was because I was looking to fashion a sort of a hook device to hang my ukulele on while it was drying, because I'm going through the finishing process, and I can still use that. I created a thing basically where I tied some twine to a hanger, and then I took two big screws and I stuck them through the peg holes, and then I just just sort of rested the screws in the twine, and it hung it nicely. So because I need to hook something basically through the peg holes at the top of so that it can hang and the body isn't actually resting on anything while I'm going through the varnishing process.
You know what's interesting is you and I are both the same kind of people that if the car just doesn't work, we immediately throw up our hands and call a guy to come fix it. And yet, like, when you need to hang a ukulele, you become just like, oh, you get all MacGyver-y, where you just found, like, 17 different things and you were able to fashion something to hang the ukulele.
I'm clever. I'm a tool-using monkey. Well, but, yeah, I was just kind of like, what can I do? Because I didn't want to wait any longer. I really, because it's going to, it's just this long, it's kind of fun, but it's also a little tedious because, like, you know, you put a coat of something on it and then you have to, like,
7 hours for
yeah,
it to
you
cure.
Have to wait. Because, like, the first coat, it was, like, the first couple of coats were the stuff called Danish oil, which is a combination of, like, linseed oil and varnish and the stain. And I had to, like, paint it on and, you know, and then, like, wipe it all off. And then, or actually, I had to paint it on, let it hang, let it become kind of tacky. Then, like, you know, wipe some of it off. Then wait. Then put another coat of it on and, like, wait, like, another half an hour. And then wipe it off. Then it had to, like, hang for, like, 8 hours. And I had it in this bathroom, this interior bathroom. We have two bathrooms. It's in the interior bathroom, which doesn't actually have any ventilation, but it, you know, like open windows, but it does have a fan. So I had the fan going so to get the stuff out, but it's still just everything now just smells like varnish.
It just seems like your house. Is this going to be one of those things where we then cut to the shot from a block away and your house just goes.
I did. I was looking something up online about using, because the next few coats are going to be this stuff called True Oil, which they use to finish gun stocks, and I was like, it said, and make sure you don't leave oil soaked rags lying around because they can combust and that will destroy your whole life, is what the guy said.
Awesome. Quit. No, stop. We need to start a punishment for people. Ryan White needs to take it one step further. People who start asking if you put birds on things need to be beaten.
No, I'm not going to put a bird on my ukulele.
I know. I'm just saying, It's not so much that I thought you were going to do that.
I've got a bird for you right here, sir.
I was going to say, there needs to be... Don't you think we need to start a public tasing? Did you put a bird on... And you put that on YouTube, and you just send a memo out to the city. All of Portland, watch this video. You'll get the same. And just, you know, and just stop it right there in its tracks.
This is why citizens need implants, so that we can just remotely punish them when they do things we don't like. When I am ruler, that's what I will do. Everyone will have implants, and when I hear tell of someone doing something, like saying put a bird on, I will just push the button. They'll get a shock.
I would wholeheartedly support that. That is a fantastic idea. Rick,
same goes for people who don't know how to merge and who go to convenience stores at like 7:30 in the morning and decide that was a good time to buy a lottery ticket with a pocket full of nickels.
Pocket full of nickels or with a credit card, which inevitably is declined, meaning you have to go through five or six more credit cards so you can buy your $3 worth of scratchers. I'm always behind that guy. All right, well, we should do some actual news. We've been talking for like an hour. Here's Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
A vocational school teacher was shot dead in front of his horrified students by another student who was training to be a security guard. Los Angeles police arrested 22-year-old Law Tan Hun moments after he shot his vocational school teacher on Wednesday afternoon. Hun left the classroom, returned with a handgun, and opened fire on the teacher, who died at the scene. There were 11 students in the class at the time. Hun and 12 other students were attending a 24-week vocational class to become security guards. According to witnesses, Hun left the classroom briefly and returned armed with a handgun. He either pushed or kicked open the door and opened fire on the 44-year-old instructor, who was standing just a few feet inside the door.
Now, it is
strange. He tossed the gun into the classroom and walked out of the building.
It is strange that nobody in the security guard class would be armed, don't you think?
Well, they are learning how. It depends on how far they are into their
I would think a teacher, though, maybe not. It seems like maybe a teacher in that class would have a gun with him, but I guess maybe security guards aren't armed all of the time. Security guards are just sort of like those, you know, they're like the English bobbies where it's like they just sort of, you know, yeah. You stop. Now don't.
And there's all kinds of levels of ability of security guards. There are highly trained security guards, you know, who are armed or even unarmed, know how to handle themselves. Then, like, there's the guy who's standing by the door at Price Club.
Yeah.
So this may have been those guys.
I was going to make more jokes, but it seems like picking on security guards is...
It's easy.
It just seems like, really, that's just... And I was going to say shooting fish in a barrel, and then that just seemed inappropriate, and it's a whole thing. Here's Dawn Taylor.
Let's do our taser watch.
Here's your taser watch for Thursday, right here on the... we're going to hold another one of these shows tomorrow, and my brain is already just like I'm on the thinnest of intellectual ice today. Here's your taser watch for... that's just wrong. Hold on a second. What the hell is it? What's going on in my brain today?
Are you just losing things over there?
No, it's not that. I just opened entirely the wrong... I opened up it, you know, because I have the soundboards where it's like the sort of instant playback at whatever. And I opened the same four soundboards for the show in exactly the same order, and I put them in the same place in my desktop every single day. Except for today, for some reason, instead of the one that has all of the watch themes, I swear to God, I just opened up a soundboard that has nothing but Brett Favre sounds.
Okay.
I don't know why it is that I thought... I mean, there's really no reason that I would need that.
No.
There's no reason that anybody would need that. All right, here's your taser watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson radio program. Were you listening to Electric Light Orchestra this morning on your headset as you were preparing? Okay.
I was.
Were you listening to Don't Bring Me Down?
I was.
Was it difficult for you to hear it without thinking of the taser watch?
Not really. I actually don't, the full song.
I guess if you hear it in context,
yeah.
You're not just hearing the hook.
Yeah.
Okay.
ELO is one of my get up and get into the mood musical choices for show prep. Yes.
You should do a top five of those at some point.
Okay.
That'd be interesting.
All
okay.
Right. For the taser watch, I will give you your choice, Rick Emerson. Do you want to hear about guy with a skewer or guy with a hammer?
Skewer.
All right. A man who called police and then barricaded himself in his home had to be subdued with a taser before he was taken into custody Monday. About 10:30 a.m., a 41-year-old man called 911 and then immediately hung up. When emergency dispatchers called back, the man sounded out of breath. Dispatchers sent officers to the scene to find out what was happening. When they arrived, they found a man had a skewer and was inside the residence. Detective said he was not cooperating with the officers. This was in Salt Lake City, by the way. Salt Lake Police Sergeant Sean Josephson said he was acting so bizarre, we were concerned for his safety. The man ended up barricading himself inside the house with a table, chairs, and other furniture, which officers were able to easily push out of the way.
So he just... Okay.
There were indications that the man wanted police to shoot him. Instead, they used a taser to subdue him and take him into custody. He was taken to Salt Lake City County Jail and booked for investigation of aggravated assault. An officer was taken to a local hospital to be checked out after injuring an ankle while trying to arrest the man.
It's a weird combination of things because it's like he wanted to be tased or wanted to be shot or whatever, and yet he's barricading himself, but like in a totally useless fashion.
Oh, look at me. I'm barricading. You're going to have to break in and shoot me, I guess. And then they like open the door and... No, okay.
No, Bob,
no, seriously.
Get in the back of the thing.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. So there you go. Do you want to know how I knew that you were listening to Light Orchestra this morning?
How?
It's because you're slowly going deaf and your volume level was actually so substantial that I could hear it on the other side of the table.
I was also listening to the crappy thingies, the earbuds.
Oh, the little chiclet things?
Yeah, the horrible little Mentos things that come with the thing because I somehow misplaced my good ones, which actually stick all the way in my ear. So I think there's more sound leakage from those white ones because they're cheaper.
We'll choose to believe that that's the reason. All right, there's your taser watch for...
Come here, Tech. Love to see you tonight.
No, damn it. Brett Favre, what are you doing? All right. Brett Favre calling about his penis. Sorry. Why would I even still have that?
I don't know. By the way, the loud ELO really helped this morning because not only was I feeling poorly when I came in, I was also inexplicably sad.
Really?
Yeah. I think it was just like might have been an offshoot of just not feeling well physically, but I just felt sad. And you were out in the kitchen and you were talking to Greg and Sarah and you were having such a good time. And I just had this one of those moments where I was like, he's telling them all kinds of stuff and they're friends and they hang out and they know about things. He's not telling me and I'm sitting here doing the news. And I started feeling just like
the Charlie
weird.
Brown theme is playing underneath.
Yeah.
The Christmas theme is playing underneath you.
And I was just like, oh, screw this. And so then I put in and I put in a little bit of Mr. Blue Sky and that picked me up.
You could have come to join us, Don.
I could have, but I had to sort the news. I had to do the news. And sometimes, I don't know, and every once in a while that like sad little 13-year-old who had no friends in junior high school like pops into my head and just goes, everybody else is friends but me. Nobody likes me. This kind of started yesterday. I was talking to Bobby about realizing that the Oscars were coming up and that no one has invited me
to
anywhere.
An Oscar party?
No one has invited me anywhere to do anything. And I thought there's the possibility, A, people probably figure, well, that Dawn Taylor, she's important. She's special. She probably has all kinds of things.
Well, yeah, they don't want to bother you because they figure your dance card is so full.
Or it's just like, just nobody invites me anywhere. So, so I'm just going to be home like, you know, in my pajamas eating pub cheese.
Okay. Because that's what's going to solve the problem, make people want to spend time with you. Have you heard about that Dawn Taylor? Sometimes days at a time, doesn't put on pants and shoves creamed cheeses into her mouth. Let's make sure that she's at our next gathering. I just was picturing like you, like just now when you're talking about me talking to Sarah and Greg in the kitchen, it cuts to like a cafeteria where like the edges of the frame become all fogged out and it's just the sort of like circular wipe on you and you're just going, and then the camera turns and everything's technicolor where we are and there's animated bluebirds coming out of the sky and landing on our shoulders.
You're all eating candy and laughing and there's a dance number going on and I'm in here and everything's gray and sad.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. You don't feel that way now, though, because of the magic of Jeff Lynn.
Right. Jeff Lynn pulled me right out of my funk.
Awesome. That's
and then you came in and you gave me the finger for no reason.
Yeah.
And so that started the day off on a nice note.
Well, now I feel bad for eating the other. Oh, I didn't even tell you what the snack was, though.
No.
So I should do that, then we should take a break here, because everybody's got a whiz and so forth. The snack that I got this morning, because there's all these M&Ms that are coming out. There's like 9 different flavors of M&Ms. Thomas Gill says there's now 3 additional flavors of Skittles that have come out recently, which is the thing I don't really care about, but I know there's some people do. The company that's leading the way at all this stuff, it's the Reese's brand. Because first there's the Reese's Peanut Butter Cup, Then there's Reese's Pieces. And that's, so that's, you know, the first. But then you just had those two, like, forever. It was like, yeah. I used to get M&M's and M&M peanuts, and then you were good for, like, 30 years. But now,
I will say that a few years ago, they came out with some kind of, I haven't seen it in a while. I don't even remember what it was exactly, but there was some kind of magical bar that Reese's came out with that was some alternate peanut butter filled candy bar.
That's the Reese's Fast Break.
Yes. Oh, my God. And that was delicious.
Yes. So now
they still make that?
Yes, they do. Oh. So now that they've got your regular Reese's peanut butter cup, you got your Reese's, your king size, which is the same thing, which is great, though, because the Reese's king size, it's, the chocolate increases by about 30%, but I'd say there's like three times as much peanut butter stuff. Also, there's an apostrophe in the front of the front that's missing, and they describe it as the peanut butter lovers version, and there's no apostrophe. And I've actually done such mental contortions to try to view that as being correct, like trying to frame it in some sort of grammatical context that makes the absent apostrophe the right way to do it. Like if it was for a group of
it was for like a
club of peanut butter lovers,
yeah,
and it was named after them. Which is the sort of thing that only matters to me, I guess.
Because really, it could have, the apostrophe could either be before or after the S,
it's,
but there still
gone.
Should be one.
Yeah, it's just gone. It's not there. Yeah. So, which is like your thing of the Mini Moo cream. Like, what is that, you know, is Mini Moo the cow? That's the only way the apostrophe makes any sense.
Yeah, who is Mini Moo and why does this belong to them?
I don't know.
Yeah.
So there's the Reese's, there's the Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, there's the Reese's Pieces, there's the Reese's King Size, there's the Reese's Peanut Butter Cup Banana or Elvis flavor that they've got.
They also make the peanut butter chips for baking with in your cookies. And I bought some a couple of weeks ago. They went into some cookies I did for Big Ass Sandwiches, and they're so good. I hadn't actually ever just eaten the peanut butter chips, and they're so good. I actually just sat there and ate them by themselves
Let me ask you this.
They're surprisingly good.
Well, I'm going to put a pin in that. You got to remind me to come back to that at the end here. So Reese's Peanut Butter Cup, Reese's Pieces, you got your Reese's Chips, you got your Reese's banana flavored, you have your Reese's Peanut Butter Cup eggs for Easter. Now, that's a seasonal thing, but they got the egg one still. They've got your Reese's Peanut Butter Cup with white chocolate. Mm-hmm. You've got your Reese's Peanut Butter Cup with dark chocolate. Your Reese's Fast Break bar. There is now the thing I had this morning was called it's a Reese's Peanut Butter Cruncher, which is their take on the Snickers Crunch Bar, I believe. It's like the Fast Break bar, but it's got a lot of crisped rice inside of it.
Oh.
So the crisped rice is really good.
There's also a Reese's. Isn't there one that has the kind of Kit Kat style wafers as well?
Yes, that is.
Because that's really good. I've had that as well.
I forget what that's called. So there's all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And then, so that's like 15 different things there. But that's what I had this morning is the Cruncher, which is quite good.
It has actual peanuts in it.
No, it's not peanuts, but it's like a Rice Krispies thing. It's like, like a crisped rice inside. It's like if you took the Reese's Peanut Butter Cup and you somehow just like fashioned it into not a square, but I mean, if you fashioned it into a bar shape and then filled it full of Rice Krispies too, without changing anything else, you jammed some Rice Krispies in there.
It is
quite good. It's like with many products, it's like with the Snickers Crunch Bar, it's the texture. It's all about the texture in your mouth. It's quite good. Final thing though, because those Reese's chips, have you had the Reese's cereal?
No.
Reese's makes a cereal that is really good because it tastes like the peanut butter from the Reese's Peanut Butter Cup made into a cereal. It is not unlike the Captain Crunch peanut butter flavor.
Which I am in favor of.
You got to try the Reese's. They actually make a version that is just peanut butter, and they make a Reese's Peanut Butter Cup cereal, which is half chocolate puffs, half peanut butter puffs. Not bad.
I almost never buy sugary cereals for the same reason I don't drink sugared sodas. It's just one of those things that psychologically some things even I can't justify putting into my body.
It's pure, like, bad.
There are things that I can eat and like pretend aren't terrible for me, like, you know, the little multigrain crackers and the vat of pub cheese and the salami and stuff, because it's like, you know, it's meat and cheese.
And dairy.
You know, and the crackers are whole grain. You know, there are these things I can do to kind of, and with a candy bar or something, it's small.
Yeah.
But it's like sugared sodas, I know I'm just drinking a big glass of sugar water and I just can't get past that. And yeah, and then buying a big box of like Captain Crunch or something like that, I just look at that and I just go, oh, Don, have you done?
Well, you're just eating a huge box of candy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing.
And you're eating a giant bowl of candy with milk poured over it.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there eating it with a spoon. And it's so delicious. But the self-loathing kicks in on such a fundamental level. I just have so much trouble with it.
I forget what I was watching a while back. But I was watching some documentary about food advertising. And they were showing these great ads for breakfast cereal from the 50s. And it was like they had somebody – it was, you know – It was like some Randolph Scott kind of guy. It was like some star of kiddie TV westerns or whatever. It was like, you know, Cowboy Bill is here to talk to you about what you ought to be eating for breakfast. Here's some vittles that you should womp up before school or whatever. And it was for what they now refer to as honey smacks, because honey has now taken the place of the word sugar in cereals, because they were sugar smacks. And I swear to God, the commercial actually just said, it just said, what did he say? He said, well, you kids love candy, don't you? Well, now you can have candy for breakfast every morning. And then it's like they cut to the kids having the sugared smack cereal with mom pouring the milk over it. And they just flat out said in the commercial, like, have candy for breakfast.
I like how at one point they had started coining this whole phrase about, like, and it's an important part of this nutritious breakfast. And that actually a bunch of them just changed that to where it would say, it's the sugary, sweet, delicious part of this nutritious breakfast. Totally. And they show like a table with like eggs and bacon and toast and a big glass of orange juice and milk, and then like a big bowl of sugar. But it's kind of like, it's the delicious part of this otherwise nutritional breakfast.
This otherwise unpalatable meal, which is merely healthy.
I believe I posted a picture. I shared this picture last weekend, not this last weekend, previous weekend. Patrick and I did one of our every couple of months going to Old Country Buffet, and we went for breakfast. And I had to post a picture because Patrick was sitting there and he had a plate just with a huge pile of ham on it and a bowl of Fruit Loops.
That's awesome.
We go to a buffet and it's like, well, I'm going to have Fruit Loops and a ham, he says.
Well, you and I have talked about the fact that the buffet, like the Vegas buffet, is great because the Vegas buffet is like an oracle that reveals to yourself and to everyone what you really would eat left to your own devices.
Yes.
And sometimes it's the strange combination of, you said, where it's just like a bunch of donuts and then, you know, a bunch of donuts and rigatoni, and that's all you want to eat. And that's it. And it's like that, because it's when you are given an infinite number of choices, you say, well, now I can just eat truly what I would if left to my own devices with no governance on me whatsoever.
Bacon and cake it is.
Right. That's it. So which is great. All right. Well, we should do this. We'll take a little break. We'll come back. We got the Corpse Watch still to come. We'll talk about last night's Justified, Breaking Bad, so forth. Later on, we'll get the clue number 4 in the EEH vending Name That Snack contest and the missing something. Greatest songs ever made. We'll do that. Don't forget to join us tomorrow when I guess we'll include Mr. Big Jim Willig. He'll be here with another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. However, before we do any of that, here's the patented Lenny D intro. We'll take a moment to talk about Squire's Electric and my goddamned mother effing refrigerator, which continues to not work. And I keep saying it like I'm like the story will have changed from the last hour, and it hasn't. But it's like,
well, is he coming back with a different refrigerator?
Maybe you would think, because it's like
I have spoken to him about
yes.
All right.
Sorry,
if Laura was here, would this be getting done?
Well, no, because here's the thing: is that it's one of those things that I don't even know that we agreed on it, but at some point it was just decided, or maybe we established the precedent that when it came time to contact the landlord about something, I would be the one to do it. I don't know why. Maybe it's because I'm the man, or she just tricked me somehow with her feminine wiles. And I just started to, but nobody likes to call the landlord and go like, oh, the sink isn't working, which is dumb because like you're paying, it's like you're a customer, so you should have no problem calling and going like, hey, my sink isn't working, please come fix it now. I guess it's because you always have that fear that he's going to evict you. Well, my sink isn't working. Get out! You know, just like, oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Cratchit. You know, and
when my water heater wasn't working, I waited like about a month and a half of just having inadequate heater water before I finally went, oh, my water heater isn't like getting. I can't like take an entire shower.
It's
I don't
you
know
felt
why.
Like you were complaining.
Kind of, yeah. And then they were like, okay, we'll send a guy. And then, like, the next day, okay, what's that guy? It's fixed. I was like, wow, I just waited a month and a half out of, like, fear and shame.
So I just feel like I'm a complainer. And plus, in full disclosure, there was this one incident where I asked him about, because we didn't have a garbage disposal and we moved in. And, of course, an American has to have a garbage disposal. That's what makes you an American, is having a disposal. That is what divides us from the lower classes of this world, Don. And so I told him, I'm like, hey, so we're going to put in one of those garbage disposals. You know, I think we asked him, I said, instead of we pay for this, could you put it in? And I think we actually just offered to pay it. I said, look, we'll buy it. We don't expect you to buy it. But if we buy it, can you maybe install this? And we said, and then look, if someday you rent this place to somebody else, you got another thing to offer them. Hey, look, we got a garbage disposal. This music's very strange.
You're the one who chose it.
Is this Yankee Doodle Went to Town?
I don't know what it is.
All right, I gotta make that go away.
What?
Just gotta vanquish that. It was bothering me. But we told him, said, like, we'll buy the thing if you install it. And he actually just said, he's like, garbage disposals are typically just a lot of trouble, in my opinion. And they break and they jam and they clog and there's gunk and I don't feel very good about that. And he just, like, left it there. And so the implication was obvious that, like, he didn't want us to do it. He couldn't really, he wasn't going to stop us from doing it. But that, like, if it ever broke, it was on us, not him. So we get the garbage disposal, and then sure enough, like a year later, something happens. It quits working. Where I just flipped, I flipped the switch. It's not working. And I go, well, I've done all I can do. I hit the on button. Nothing. And so I call him, and actually, you got to give it to him. He actually goes, well, I told you not to put it in. And so we just called a plumber. We had to call a guy to come fix it. So now, ever since then, I feel like he's just going to go, well, this is like the garbage disposal I told you not to put in. So the fridge is just not working. And so Laura's gone, so I'm just a filthy human being regardless, you know, like, anyway. And so the fridge is just, like, there's nothing really in there that's going to go bad immediately. Like, there was no, like, we had, like, I think half a carton of milk or something. And so I just finished that before it went bad. But there's, you know, there's just, like, carrots and, you know, like, cheese and stuff. So it's not like...
And we know from the trunk pizza experience that, you know, keeping food refrigerated is not a priority for you.
Not a big priority. So it's not like anything is really going to go bad immediately, but it's just getting that sort of, like, warm, musty smell in the kitchen. Not of rotting as such, but just where, like, you know, you just go, something isn't quite working in here. So then last night, I swear to God, I actually found myself doing that thing of just taking food and just putting it on the front porch because I knew it was going to be cold. And, like, was like, I can't drink warm Vizo, and I'm setting my Vizo outside. And then I'm like, wait a minute, I could just put everything outside. So I'm like, so if you were, like, across the street and you already thought I was a rube because there was an old fridge on my lawn last weekend or whatever, now you just see me just setting food on the front porch to keep it cold.
Neighborhood, that's just an invitation to hobos.
I know. It looks like I'm just living in a cave, like Osama bin Laden or something. So, anyway, I don't know what I'm going to do. I just, you know, I'm just going to call the landlord, and then I know he's going to pick, like, the day that I can't be home. Oh, how about Saturday? Saturday will be, like, the day I can't do it or whatever. I have no point. Anyway, so, blah, 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 Squire's Electric. Because if you're like me with, like, anything, then you're probably like that with, I mean, if you, this is why I just don't even if I taught myself how to work on electrical things at home, I wouldn't dare actually to do it. I wouldn't actually attempt it because I would probably kill myself somehow. So just you contact Squire's Electric, you get a problem. And here's the thing about Squire's Electric. They're not like my landlord. They're not going to come out and like taunt you probably. I mean, unless you're really asking for it. They're not going to be like, well, did you put the bifurcator into the, well, it's your fault. They'll just come and they'll fix it. And it's really a perfect system of exchange. You'll describe the problem. They'll tell you probably what you're going to pay. You'll say yes. They'll come out. They'll fix it. You'll pay them. They'll go away, and your shame is never known. And it's like you don't have to be mocked by everybody else. So, and they probably won't mock you like that much. And even so, it's worth it because, you know, they provide a reasonable service at a reasonable price.
And come on, their whole job is to do stuff for people who don't know how to do the thing needs to be done. So it's not like, you know, you're the first guy they've dealt with who didn't know how to fix something.
They're like braces for your mental polio. That's what they are. You know, you can't really, you know, they maybe not, but they're a thing. They do stuff. I should have considered that one a second time. I should have looked at that a little longer through the store window before I bought it. That line. Glad I can amuse. 503-252-1609. That's the phone number for Squires Electric. 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. Yes?
Can that be the actual motto for our show as a whole? The Rick Emerson Show, it's like braces for your mental polio.
Yes, I give you permission.
I'm going to start working on the T-shirts immediately.
Now this goddamn Yankee Doodle thing is back. Okay. We'll be back after this, kids. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
The footprints over the snow, the fabric of was approaching her door. Oh, we didn't make a sound.
There's nothing like finding gold within the rocks, hard and cold. I'm so surprised to find more. Always surprised to find more.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It was a teenage wedding and the old folks wished them well. You could see that Pierre did truly love the mademoiselle. And now the young monsieur and madame have rung the chapel bell. C'est la vie, say the old folks. To show you never can tell. They furnished off an apartment with a two-room robot sale. The coolerator was crammed with TV dinners and ginger ale. But when Pierre found work, the little money coming worked out well. C'est la vie, say the old folks. It goes to show you never can tell. Rapid tempo of the music fell. C'est la vie, say the old folks. It goes to show you never can tell. They bought a souped up jitney, was a cherry red 53, and drove it down to Orleans to celebrate the anniversary. It was there where Pierre was wedded to the lovely mademoiselle. C'est la vie, say the old folks. It goes to show you never can tell. Truly love the mademoiselle. And now the young monsieur and madame have rung the chapel bell. C'est la vie, say the old folks. It goes to show you never can tell.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Rick Emerson radio program. If you're curious about this sort of thing, Dawn's actually taking a picture of snow. Uh-huh. Who do you remind everybody of right now, Dawn?
That's Nino.
Uh-huh. That's right. Okay, it really, to be fair, there is a significant amount of snow coming down. It's actual hella snow. You know, it's too bad that that rooftop patio of ours isn't covered, because we could actually go do the, we could do the show up top, sort of in the middle of the storm. Let me just... All right. It is the Rick Emerson radio program live from the... Wow. I mean, we're really encircled by snow at this point. This is... Okay, that's legitimately impressive. I'm looking out the window right now. Wow. Wow, wow. Okay, I have to close the curtains. Otherwise, I'm going to just sit and stare at the snow like an idiot. It's 503-505-6964. 503. Oh, God, my wife is in Tacoma. Oh, wow. Here's the thing that sucks about that. I don't think it's snowing in Tacoma, but this is probably going to... This will impede her progress home or result in her staying in Tacoma an additional night or two, which is just like... You know, and that's metric time when you're
You'll
in Tacoma.
You'll never get that fridge now.
No. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. We've got a recap of last night's Justified that we'll get to here in a few. Talk a little bit about Breaking Bad. We've got clue number four coming up in the Name That Snack contest for this week. And we'll do another installment of the greatest songs ever made. Are you posting a picture of the snow on the internet?
I am. I'm just trying.
Are you worried that other people in Portland won't be able to see the snow or spot it or identify it when they come across it?
Maybe. I just let people know that, yes, at this moment, this is what we are actually looking out our window at this very moment.
Are you putting that on Facebook?
I am.
Okay, excellent. So forth. I'll
yes.
just give you a second.
Now
to...
out the... Oh.
Did you see the TSA now has internal cavity X-ray devices?
So they, like, stick a wand up in you, or?
I maybe.
Yeah.
I'm just passing the time.
Oh. Did I ever tell you the story about when I had an ultrasound done on my ovaries?
I'm sorry. I don't know why I laughed at that. There's nothing inherently funny about that statement. No, you didn't, Dawn.
Someday I'll tell you that story because they have a special wand they use.
Really?
To get to the ovaries.
Oh, yeah.
To do the...
I know all about that wand.
I thought they do it on the outside, like when you watch on TV when they're doing ultrasounds of, like, pregnant ladies. No, apparently to get to your ovaries, they got to go inside.
And don't I know it.
And that was one of the more intimate experiences I've ever shared with a stranger. Okay, so I have posted to both Facebook and the Twitter the snow from our
excellent
Emerson News Network window.
The Oregon flower is the Oregon grape.
Oh.
Okay.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
I have a corpse watch.
Awesome. Hold on a second. Let me just minimize this, reduce that, turn the other thing off, and stick this third thing in a drawer. And we have your corpse watch for Thursday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
I'm digging up bones. I'm digging up bones. Exhuming things that's better left alone. But I'm resurrecting memories of love that's dead and I'm sitting alone, digging up bones.
Here's Dawn Taylor with your corpse watch for Thursday.
A man has been accused of living with his uncle's rotting corpse for 30 days and stealing from the dead man's bank account. Patrick Lara, 45, was arrested on a number of charges after failing to notify authorities that his uncle had died. Police discovered Adrian Lugo's body after another relative flagged down deputies outside the house in Merced, California, and told them he suspected the 63-year-old was inside the property. As officers started checking the house, Mr. Lara pulled up in his car, stopped abruptly, and turned around. When stopped by deputies, Mr. Lara allegedly told them he never called for medical attention after his uncle fell and broke his arm on January 22nd, and died a short time later.
And so the body was where exactly?
In the house.
But in the house, like in the basement underneath some Afghans is one thing. In the house, like across the room while you're trying to watch TV and it's just, you know, granddad's over there just holding a remote control and rotting.
I don't think this really gives the details of where specifically in the house the body was.
Let me ask you this right now. Yeah. Let's say there's a dead body in your house. Maybe it's Patrick, maybe it ain't. There's a dead body in your house, your place where you live right now. And I'm like, you know, you're going to have to live with this body. It's like a Brewster's Millions thing. You have to live with the body for 30 days. You can do anything to it, you know, like if you have to go to the store and buy something, anything that you wouldn't be able to obtain under normal circumstances, you can do, but it has to remain in your home for 30 days.
Wow.
And you can't have access to anything that you normally wouldn't have access to. Where do you put it? How do you take care of it?
Would I be able to purchase something to help myself
with
this?
Yeah, but it can't be like some magical thing you would normally never have access to.
I think the only thing I could really think of would be one of those reach-in freezers.
Okay. Like the kind of like the sort of the low chest kind?
Yeah, the chest kind that you can like stuff a whole bunch of stuff in.
Do you have a place in your home where you could put that?
I have a storage closet off of my patio. I could put it there. I also have two bedrooms, so I could put it in my office.
Would you be able to have that delivered? Would they deliver that to your apartment?
Yeah, you could get that delivered.
All right.
It would have been easier when I owned a house because we had a basement. So I could have just, like bought one of those chests and had guys take it down to the basement. And,
see, I hadn't thought about the freezer. I was thinking about my basement. And then there's that whole – what are
you got to make sure that if you're going to live with it for a while, you got to do something so it doesn't stink. That's the first priority because bodies start to smell within like the first couple of days and they smell bad. And by 30 days, that is going to be just appalling.
So it's not like a thing where I can just put some Arm & Hammer baking soda
in
there.
No, and that's something we're going to talk about Breaking Bad later. And that's something I really admired about Breaking Bad is that they did address that. They had a dead body down in the basement and they wrapped him up in plastic and everything. But within a couple of days, he was drawing flies and it was bad. And you could tell that they were actually being used because you see in a lot of TV shows, people finding bodies that have been someplace for like a week. And, like, you know, maybe, like, one of the detectives will, like, wave a hand in front of their face or something. Ooh, that's a little stinky. It's like, no. If a body has been at room temperature, you know, in a house for a week, no, you're not going to just wave your hand
the
in front
only
of your
thing
face.
In my fridge right now is some carrots and a loaf of bread, and it already smells. So, you know.
If you've ever had chicken go bad, you've got a slight idea of what a dead body is going to smell like. And it is a bad, horrible, just unlivable smell.
It doesn't just taste like chicken. It smells like chicken.
Yeah. So this would be bad. So yeah, I would have. What would you do?
I was just going to say I never thought about the freezer. I was just thinking that I have all of these Tupperware tubs. What's that brand? That Roughneck tub thing or whatever. So I have that. And so
Rubbermaid.
I was thinking, Rubbermaid or whatever, like for trash cans. So I was thinking I have a bunch of those, and I was thinking, well, okay, do I put them in there? But then I was getting to the odor thing, and for some reason, the only thing that occurred to me after Arm & Hammer was those like. Those it's like small sort of like Ben and Jerry's. It looks like a Ben and Jerry's pint or whatever, but it's a thing you just open in the basement and it absorbs moisture to kind of keep the if you have a dank basement or something and it dries out. And I don't know why for some reason it occurred to me that might be useful because it absorbs moisture maybe coming off the body. But as for the rest of it, I don't really like. There's no your heavy duty plastic bags. I don't think that's not going to keep the stench out.
Oh,
it's not going to keep the air from going in.
No,
it has to be
no.
Something truly airtight.
Right.
And I think a freezer would be the only thing you could.
Well, you're also,
come up with.
You know, it's meat, so yeah, you're keeping it at a temperature that it's not decaying fast enough that you've got the smell.
What if I put it inside one of those Rubbermaid things and then caulked it shut, sealed it up totally
with
caulking?
That would work for a while, but plastic is still porous.
It's porous.
The smell is still going to come out.
It would have to be like in a glass box of some kind, but you don't have a glass box just sitting around.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing. It's a difficult thing to do. I mean, there's a reason that they bury bodies like 6 feet down and cover them in lime.
There should totally be a reality show. Show based about this, where they like on MythBusters, they have what's his name, Buster, who's the anatomically correct dummy that they use to simulate auto accidents, or if they have to do physical injuries, they use this thing Buster, and so he's got that fake fake skin that like medical examiners use for ballistics test. Somebody should do a reality show where they create like in a factory, they just create a simulation, a replica of a dead decomposing body. And then they give it to you, and then it's got to be a whole thing where you got to dispose of it because it'd be one of those replicate the things you see done in the movies shows, like escaping through the door in the top of an elevator, which is never goddamn there.
I would watch that.
I would totally watch that. All right.
Well, police say that receipts found inside the house showed that Mr. Lara had been using his uncle's ATM card to get cash from his accounts and used it to gamble at a casino. Mr. Lugo's body had started decaying by the time it was found. It was a month later, and his nephew had lived there the whole time, enduring the terrible smell, according to local news.
Maybe the thing is, maybe the key is, you, depending on where you live, you wait until winter to kill somebody, because then, you can just stick them out back, cover them up with some Glad bags or whatever, and like some rocks to keep keep the dogs off. But then it's like the Mother Nature will preserve it while you kind of
figure out what to do.
Yeah, while you play the string out to the end and kind of think. Are your fingernails two different colors?
Yes.
Okay. There's your corpse watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
We're so easily distracted. You're looking at that. I'm looking at how I destroyed the curtain thing behind you, and now it's driving me crazy because I can't stop looking at it. Thank you.
All right. Glad you pointed it out, because if I'd seen that later and realized it had been that way the whole time, it would have driven me crazy.
Okay. I'm sure you're looking at you and then looking at that and then looking at you and then looking at that. And it was like, God!
There was the greatest, and by greatest I mean most embarrassing moment this morning, where I was in my – I have this sort of walk-in closet where I keep all my – I have a walk-in closet just for my black T-shirts because they just take up like thousands and thousands and thousands of square feet. And so I was standing in front of my wall of black T-shirts this morning going, what kind of a day is it?
And apparently you decided it was a day with nothing on the shirt at all. It's just a plain black T-shirt.
Can I tell you this? Not that anybody cares about this, but I have, not only do I have a separate walk-in closet just for my black T-shirts, I in fact have, inside that walk-in closet, I have... You know, there's like a sort of armoire thing, and then there's the thing of the whole system of shelves. I have one whole separate system of shelves just for my plain black T-shirts, and they're divided into several sections. There are ones that I only wear on the weekend, and then there are ones that I wear if I'm going to be going out and seeing people.
It sounds a little crazy, but I can understand it, though, because, you know, with Patrick, I like, you know, we're married, so I kind of dress him a lot.
Yeah.
We had that thing where I guess you went through with sort of like with Sarah, for example, where we went through a period of me going, no, honey,
you can't wear that.
No, please don't wear that. But I've been wearing this shirt for like 10 years. I bought it at Marshall's. It's like, no. And so like every time I buy him a T-shirt, it seems like I buy him a black T-shirt. I buy him lots of black. He now has lots of black T-shirts. And there's this point where you just don't want to go rummaging through all of them to figure out which black T-shirt with white something is which. You know, you do have to like kind of keep them stacked in a certain way so you can like easily riffle through and figure out which is which.
Well, and here's the thing, and not that now I just sound like I'm just turning into a woman. But the thing about it is that Calvin Klein, and it's not like I'm a guy hung up on brand names. I'm really not. Like I would just buy, if I could get away with just buying everything at like Walmart and still looking, you know, somewhat respectable, I would. And in fact, so on the lower, I can't even believe I'm talking about this. On the lower, this is so uninteresting even to me, but now it's like I have to finish the thought. I have to just get to the end of it or else it's going to nag me for some reason. It's like the thing when somebody starts Come Sail Away with Cartman and he's just got to sing it all the way to the end. So I got this shelf of black T-shirts that I will just wear if I'm just around the house or if I'm going to be like getting dirty, if I'm going to be like outside or something, or if I'm going to be like cleaning something or doing dishes and I want to get schmutz all over it. You know, and those are all from Walmart because Walmart sells black T-shirts for like $2.99 each. I mean, they're these like black Fruit of the Loom T-shirts that – I mean, they're dirt cheap. But the thing about it is like they're crap. They're terrible. They fade like instantly. They go from black to gray to just the sort of way they're, you know, and it's like they get the, not the like the pilling, but like where they just start to like fray, like it's like an all over kind of a fraying where it looks like I'm wearing a merkin. So I don't know what the hell that's all about. The only black T-shirt I have ever been able to find that retains its color when you wash it and that actually fits me properly is this one shirt from Calvin Klein. And Calvin Klein, unsurprisingly, makes 7 different kinds of black T-shirts. And I don't mean like one's a wife beater and one's – I mean just like black short sleeve crew neck T-shirts, mm-hmm. 7 different varieties made by Calvin Klein. And I had to buy all – it was, of course, the 7th one that I tried when I found one that actually fit. So – and then it – but they're all indistinguishable from each other except for this tiny little serial number that's on the bag and on the inside of the – that's on the inside of the shirt and the collar where the label is. The label, of course, is printed in black on black and like washes away after the first, you know, after the first time to the. So now I have no idea what that serial number was. So that as soon as these shirts are like worn out, I'm screwed again because I won't remember.
I used to wear a lot of when I was younger and thinner and cuter. I used to wear a lot of the wife beater undershirts and I would wear men's. And there was some store, I can't remember the name of it, but it was one of they're not in business anymore, but it was their store brand and it was a good shirt. It was really sturdy and I could walk in and I could buy like a bag with like 3 black ones and a bag with 3 gray ones, you know, and I'd take them home. And then they stopped. And I went through this whole process where I went like a year and a half trying to find black, the wife beater
that fit you the right way.
That fit me the right way and that weren't just crap.
Right.
And I finally, again, I ended up buying Calvin Klein's. It was a brand of Calvin Klein that they came like 2 or 3 to a package. And they were the only ones that were actually built with any sort of sturdiness.
Well,
and then I could get black ones.
And then you kind of feel like you're sort of a douche, like you're being taken advantage of because you're buying a Calvin Klein shirt. But I arrived at this only because everything else was just terrible and it would fall apart. And these are, I don't know however much they are, but you know, I did because Laura was, you know, have you tried American Apparel? And I try never to go to American Apparel because I walk into that store and I just feel ugly. I feel ugly and uncool and just and lame and for reasons that I can't really explain. But there's just something about that store where you walk in and you just feel like you were so unpretty and that you're just you got like an extra hand growing out of your forehead. And here's the other reason I don't go to American Apparel. How much would you – like this plain black T-shirt from Calvin Klein. The same shirt at American Apparel, a plain black short sleeve men's crew neck shirt. How much would you imagine that goes for?
At American Apparel, I'd say $22.
It's $17.99.
Yeah, there's a shirt that's being sold by I got like an email, Torrid, which is the
that's the larger ladies,
the Hot Topic for fat chicks.
Yeah,
and they have like this really cool black Goonies T-shirt with the Goonies logo, and it's great. And I was like, I would love that. It's $28.
Yeah,
and I'm like, no, yeah. No.
Here's the thing about. Can I just say this about that Torrid store? The you know, because they got the, you walk by there and it's like they got the like Victoria's Secret and all those stores. They do this too, where it's not the mannequins, but it's like the posters. The wrong way to put it, but the big hanging photos that are like hanging from, you know, whatever, from like fishing line. They're just sort of dangling in the window that show like women trying to wear. They've always, and I speak for a lot of men here, they got the hottest chicks in those Torrid photos.
Well, yeah, they're non-skinny, kind of slightly gothy looking girls, and they're good looking chicks.
Well, and don't you think that it's like they have, just perceptually, they have like an additional battle to fight because they got the whole like it's the blah 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 for fat chicks. So I think they realize that like the girls they put, like all of their stuff and all of the their models have to look fantastic because they've got that extra sort of layer of stigma or whatever to it to get through.
Well, one thing I really, really credit Torrid with is that a lot of times if you go online and you shop for clothes, if you're looking for something over the size of 14, size 14, they use plus size models, which generally are women who wear size 14, 12 or 14, but are like 5'9".
Right.
Torrid, if you go to Torrid's website and shop, they have actual fat chicks modeling their clothes, and they are really super good-looking fat chicks. But they are genuinely like women who would be customers of the store, and that's nice because then you get a slightly better idea of like, well, how would this look on my body, which is shaped like a sphere.
And plus, they've got what's her name? They've got the I can never remember her name. It's the chick who's not Liv Tyler.
Yeah,
what is her name?
Liv Tyler's
Mia.
Mia Tyler did a bunch of stuff for Torrid.
Yeah, so she's a she's what Paul Stanley. She's what the Paul Stanley rubber duck would call a fine looking lady. I don't even know what. But I'm going to tell one final. I swear to God, I'll keep it like 30 seconds. But here's the thing about this final thing.
Thursdays.
The thing about this final little anecdote is it's gonna be. And I'm not overstating this. It's the most appropriate thing you've ever heard, given what we just did. The reason I was talking about standing in my walk-in closet looking at my T-shirts this morning, I was trying to figure out what to wear. And I did that thing of putting on a shirt, and then I was like checking, putting in the mirror and straightening and doing my hair and whatever. And then it's that thing of I realized that like at some point, I think it was like from the antiperspirant, I get like the white streak or whatever. And I was like rubbing, it's not coming up. I'm like, fine. So I just took it off and, you know, and went to a different shirt. So the shirt that I actually settled on this morning, after what seemed like hours of indecision, just sitting there like Daria Morgendorfer, just looking at all of my outfits, is I settled on that AC/DC shirt that just says ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. That's what I almost
that shirt.
And it took me like 20 minutes to decide on that. And so then the irony is now, by dint of not wearing my ADHD shirt, we just spent like 4 hours going down innumerable side roads in our heads about clothing and standing inside a closet and looking at black T-shirts.
Well, what with me buying Patrick shirts, by the way, I have this difficulty sometimes. We have these conversations about what he should wear leaving the house, mostly because of the appropriateness of them, because I realize that I tend to buy him shirts that are marginally appropriate for public consumption. I won't buy him anything that I think would really be horribly offensive. But there are some times when, you know, they're generally about like death and destruction and horrible things happening. And they're funny, but, you know, they're not always appropriate for certain situations. Like, you know, I did custom make him that shirt that says, "I hate your children," for when we had to go to like
which is awesome
weekend movie screenings of kids' movies.
Here's an interesting point. Somebody says, this message on Skype says, about our thing of Torrid and Mia Tyler and the girls they have in their ads, says, "I'm a fat guy and there aren't really super good looking fat guys." That's an interesting idea, actually. It's an interesting dynamic. The fact that there are plus size female models, there are really no plus size male models. And there's no and even the stores for those guys, you don't go like, check out the hot fat guy.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I think the thing is that men aren't portrayed in the world at large in our society as coming in two sizes, which is skinny, i.e. optimum,
and
i.e.
everybody else.
Normal,
yeah,
or fat.
Yeah.
And that's really, and the thing is, even though most women are like, you know, not like a size six. What we see in movies and television and just society at large, there's this decision that that women are correct when they are thin. And then everybody, all other women are fat and, of course, by definition, horrible. So when you see good looking women who aren't skinny, it's like, well, look at it, like it's supposed to be some kind of a surprise. But the thing is, men can come in all kinds of different sizes and they're considered OK. And it's not that there aren't good looking, heavier guys. It's just that we don't look at them and go, pig.
Well,
because, you know,
it's also that
a bit of a tummy.
It's the way they market it, too, because there's two things at play there. One is, first of all, I think that it's just there are fewer male models than female models for men's clothes. Mm-hmm. In other words, guys go into a store and guys aren't really going to be suckered in by how the shirt looks on somebody else.
Yeah.
Like women, I think, go, well, that looks really good on her. I wonder what it would look good on her. Guys just going to go, do you have pants? I need pants. Where are they? Your pants section. And they put them on. They don't
care. And if a guy's looking at the International Mail catalog and looking at the models, he's not really looking at those clothes to figure out like how that shirt's going to look on him.
Yeah.
He's looking at the International Mail catalog because he likes looking at the models.
That's the thing. So guys don't really need to see the clothes on anything but maybe a mannequin. Like the mannequin is fine. He goes, I guess it'll fit me. I guess it'll cover my junk. Yeah,
that's a shirt.
That's it. The will it shield me against the elements as I hunt Mastodon on the plains? Great. And the second thing. I was going to say the Seamus weighs in. He says, of course, men are also marketed to differently, that there aren't stores for fat guys. There are stores for big and tall, and they only ever show the tall guys. They only show the guy who's like 6'9". They don't show the guy who's just like, you know, in a 90-inch waist.
To be fair, though, what I just said about there being like two speeds for women, you know, skinny and fat, there is, to a certain extent, in entertainment, there is that. Because I know that I saw the movie, Grown Ups.
Oh, yeah.
And Kevin James is in it. And I remember, you know, reading reviews of the movie afterwards and saying, oh, this guy's this guy and this, and he's the schlubby one and he's the dumb one. He's like, and Kevin James is the fat guy.
Right.
And the thing is, Kevin James is considerably less heavy than he once was. Kevin James is actually in pretty damn good shape, but he's not tiny and small like Adam Sandler and David Spade. And so he's still playing the fat one.
Right.
But the thing is, if you ran into Kevin James on the street, you would not.
He's not obese.
Yeah, you would not go, wow, there's a fat guy.
You would go, he's not Louis Anderson.
Yeah,
or
when
something.
He was doing King of Queens or whatever, yeah, he was pretty damn fat. But you see him now, he's not what you would consider in real life. You would not consider him a fat guy.
No, but in an industry where he's standing next to Orlando Bloom, who's basically just made of pencils. And also, it's that thing where it's like the Drew Carey thing, where you just get tagged as being the fat girl or the fat guy, and that's just like what you are forever.
Yeah. Unless you become like Drew Carey, do whatever he did, got his stomach stapled or whatever, and became like this dried out piece of jerky for a while.
Right.
He actually looks pretty good now, but for a while he was like way too tan and way too leathery looking and way too skinny, way too fast.
They removed it all at once.
Wow. Yeah. Dude.
We're talking about that show Episodes. So this is actually a good segue. We'll talk about Episodes, and we should move to Justified, Breaking Bad, and whatnot. You're talking about Episodes. You know what that show reminds me of, just from your description more than anything else, is the Jay Mohr show Action.
Yeah.
Which was genius.
It was.
Which was freaking genius. And if anybody out there has not seen the Jay Mohr sitcom Action, it only lasted one 13-episode season, and it was and it holds up because I actually watched it on DVD just a couple of months ago. I watched the entire thing in a weekend. And it is still so good. You could put that on television today. If you put it on today, it would still fit, but it would also be a success, I think. It was a little bit ahead of its time, I think. It was one of the first shows where they actually, and it was on Fox, where they wrote and shot the shows with profanity, and then they just bleeped it out, which they do now, but I don't think at the time it was very common.
Yeah.
There's that great sequence where there's an action follows not real time. It's a serialized story of this guy, Peter Dragon, who's a movie producer and who's had a huge flop. And so he's trying to get his mojo back in Hollywood by getting this single film produced called Beverly Hills Gun Club. And so the series tracks it's a little bit like that movie, The TV Set, but it tracks the writing, production, filming and everything of one single film in Hollywood. And it's just brilliant. It's just fantastic. But there's this whole subplot where the female lead, Regan McNeil, who is this like sex bomb, they go to like the Peter Dragon goes to her trailer the first day after casting her in the thing, and she's just bloated up, and he hasn't seen her for like a year and a half, and she enters the door and she's just this somewhat sizable girl, And so there's this fantastic subplot of taking her to this secret, like, Dr. Feelgood, this sort of, like, a clinic run by this sort of sinister Asian doctor where he can remove – he can get you from, like, a size 16 to a size 2 in an hour and a half. And through this, like, horrible liposuction that costs, like, $80,000. And he goes, well, you leave her here. She'll be 16. You know, you come back. She'll be size 2. And Peter Dragon says, how do you do that? And he goes, oh, with this. And he holds up, like, this hose that has this horrible, like, spiky, jabby contraption on the end of it. And Peter Dragon goes, wow, I hope that doesn't hurt too much. He goes, oh, it hurt. It hurt like hell. It hurt like nothing ever hurt you. But you'll be thin. It was so great. It's just fantastic. All right. Well, on that note, before we let's talk about Justified. And okay. This sounds so dumb, but I've been just delaying the talk of Justified a little bit today because I realized I have no music bed put together for Justified. So I'll have to have that for next week. So so for this week, we'll have to we'll just use this.
Okay. Well, you probably mentioned I posted the photo of the snow to Facebook, and a listener responded, "Panic now! Hoard your bread, make a stop at Les Schwab, and turn on KGW for emergency instructions."
Incidentally, PCC is closing their campuses at 3 p.m. for fear that students might die in the great ice events this year. All right.
And someone else living in Michigan said, "They're talking about a half a foot here where I live tonight and tomorrow." Everyone pretty much yawned.
Yeah, you know, they had, there was that whole, like, snowpocalypse in New York. They had 34 inches in Central Park over the course of, like, a day and a half. Well, and did I send you that picture of Chicago? Of the freeway in Chicago where people were just like, F this, and they got out of the cars and they just walked? And that's in Chicago where, like, they just sort of roll their eyes at anything that's less than, you know, 2 or 3 feet. So, oh, it hurt. It hurt like hell. I don't know what we're doing with this music. So last night's Justified, for which this will be the ad hoc bed.
This is terrible.
It is. I just don't have the thing put together. So Walton Goggins continues to just be... Here's the thing about that character. Is just you can never get a fix on whether what his deal is, whether he's on the level or not. It's just the character just continues to be such a complete enigma, even when he's doing something that should tip his hand as to how he really, whether he's reformed or not. You can just never really get a read on him.
He plays everything having to do with this character with such sincerity that, like, even looking back on, you know, all of his stuff with, you know, having his Jesus camp and his minions doing drug deals for him, there still seemed to be, like, some genuine sincerity on his part about getting them to follow the Lord.
Right.
Yeah, he's crazy in a completely fascinating way.
Well, and he's one of those characters that it almost shouldn't work. Somebody said this about the character of Omar on the Wire, it becomes. You look back at this when you get to the end of that series, when you get to the end of season 5 of The Wire, and you look back at the character of Omar and you think about just what a great, fascinating, compelling character he is, and that he almost shouldn't work because he's this weird sort of, like, inner city Batman. And yet you buy it completely because of the writing and because Michael K. Williams is just such a fantastic actor. And so it is with Walton Goggins. And he was that way on The Shield, too, where everybody in The Shield could have been just some caricature drawn in primary colors of either villainy or heroism. And Goggins just has that. And he does have that weird kind of like Timothy Oliphant, where he's just a little bit unbalanced inside. There's just a little bit something underneath the surface that he might be legitimately crazy a little bit. And so that he informs the character with that.
I have no idea what the future is going to hold. But at the end of this episode, I was left with the impression that he really actually does want to, you know, change his life, you know, because his primal scream of frustration at not being left alone to just do what he's trying to do seems so, you know, deeply, deeply heartfelt.
God, and how that guy who plays, what is his name? Is something Crow? What is
Dewey Crow.
Dewey Crow. And he has that thing of talking about himself in the third person, which I just noticed last night. These are hard times for Dewey Crow. and it's like that show. Justified, does it seem to you that Justified, if you were to just like to pull the camera back and pull the camera back and pull the camera back, Justified seems like it must take place in the same universe as Sons of Anarchy and The Shield in some way.
Yeah.
Because that guy just seems like so many of those... He seems like one of those guys in Sons of Anarchy that is just sort of evil but deeply stupid at the same time. You know, he's like the guy with the gloves and he's the serial masturbator or whatever that guy's name is on the... And Sons of Anarchy is filled with those guys where they're just sort of evil but they're sort of like comically stupid rubes at the same time.
But also, guys, and I think it's very common, from what I've heard from people in law enforcement, very, very common among a lot of criminals that think they're smart.
Right.
Really genuinely believe that they are smart. And boy, they really aren't.
You know,
but they think they are.
And yet he's on like a bus, you know, filled with like OxyContin smugglers because he's going to make $200
yeah.
for it. So
where was I? I had something I was going to say and I kind of laughed. One of the things I'm really loving about Justified, I loved it last season. I'm loving this season. We've talked before about liking shows very much like The Shield and like the best of Joss Whedon, where they set up certain expectations. You as a TV viewer kind of become lulled into expecting that things are going
right.
to play out a certain way. And then going, no, we're not going to have that happen that way. And this episode with, you know, Dewey Crowe pulling his ridiculous scheme of pretending to be Raylan, getting a hat and saying he's Raylan. And then, you know, the cop coming in and talking to Raylan and talk because, you know, well, you know, I know you were the guy. You were doing the thing. And so you're thinking to yourself, oh, God, now he's going to have this particular mess that he's
right.
going to have to clean up. And instead, being Raylan Givens, he just walks over to the door, opens the door and says, am I the guy you saw? And she says, no. It's slam.
Which is great because that's the sort of thing that you're right
or
on.
She said, oh, hell no.
On a lesser TV show. You at home would be going, just ask him if it's the – ask her if you're the guy. And they don't. And instead, they just – they work themselves for the purposes of, like, alleged drama or comedy deeper into this comedy of errors, which you as the viewer go, like, I could solve that problem in 5 seconds by just asking if I'm the same guy.
Yeah.
And so it's great to see them behave in a real-world way like that. I do believe that that's why we're living in a golden age of television, because – every generation of TV writers grew up on the generation before them, and they know those cliches. They know how to avoid them, you know. And Whedon is another. He's another guy that does the same thing, where it's the setting up some sort of horrible cliche or trope or whatever, and then skirting it or subverting it or imploding yeah. it in some strange way.
My favorite one of those that I always think of with Whedon was an episode of Angel. I think it might have even been the very first episode of Angel, when he had that big black car that he was driving around, and he's on his way somewhere to do. I think he was going to save Charisma Carpenter from the vampire that was going to like do her in. And of course, also in that episode was her going, "Oh come on, I grew up in Sunnydale or whatever it's called. You know, you think I don't know a vampire
right.
when I see one?" But he's like going to drive his car through the front gates. You know, and we've seen that in so many movies and TV shows. And he drives his car into the big wrought iron front gates, and it just smashes up the front of his car.
Right.
And I was like, good for you, good for you, TV.
Well, I like to think that those guys have just, you know, because you could probably fill a box full of index cards of just crap you've seen done a jillion times that never really happens.
Yeah.
And that
wouldn't work.
Yeah. And that you can just deconstruct those one by one by one by one. So I like shows that do that and that they do it. And that they don't, and that they also don't stop to linger on their own cleverness. They just do it, and then the characters just move on because that's what you would really do.
Yeah.
So, we should actually just probably go to the Breaking Bad thing because I want to make sure that we get a chance to do all of this stuff here. But I will say, the last night's Justified was really, really great. And if you are not watching it right now, if you're sort of holding back, I mean, we're only what, 3 episodes into this season, and so we got the you got the last season, which was I think 13 episodes. So it's not like outside the realm of possibility that you could watch the first season, get caught up, and then be watching it now. So I would say that Justified is good enough that you probably don't want to do the thing that I sometimes do of waiting till the end of the season and watching it all at once. I mean, it's good enough to be watching it every week.
Yeah, go start at the beginning, watch it up till here, and then watch it along with us week by week.
That's what I'm saying. Hey, are you watching the Chicago Code by chance?
No, I haven't seen any of that yet.
Because I'm going to watch Fringe, but I also want to be watching something that's not sci-fi, and Cheryl's kind of giving me the, not a hard sell, but a somewhere between soft and hard sell about the Chicago Code, which is from Sean Ryan.
Yeah.
And she said it's not, you know, that he has had... You could see that he makes a few concessions to network television in terms of like expository dialogue, but that it actually is it's far better than she expected. She said it was quite good. So
maybe I'll give it a try.
All right. Before we let's see, let me just do that. There we go. All right. All right, so Breaking Bad.
Breaking Bad.
So you have now watched the first season all the way through, and you are how far into the second season?
I'm three episodes into the second season.
That's so great. And it's, yeah, I think 13 episodes. And that first season, I thought they deliberately only did six episodes just to keep it tight and taut, and apparently it was the writer's strike.
I think it was seven, actually. It was supposed to be nine, and then, the writer's strike came, and they had to...
You don't notice it. It's not like anything seems missing, and it doesn't seem hurried. And then season two starts, and here's the thing about Breaking Bad. And I won't spoil anything about this season or about season three. The great thing, and I have to thank Seamus for this, because he was the one who really, he did everything but come to my house and punch me in the face about watching Breaking Bad, because I was like, I'll get to it. And he would just send me these messages where he's like, you got to watch Breaking Bad. And finally, he and Agler were just like, they were just like tag teaming me via email, telling me that I had to watch it, which is perhaps not surprising. There's a, I think one can see a little bit of Walter White in Bruce Agler.
I can see that.
which makes you and I both Jesse, by the way.
I can see that too.
But it really is, the thing about Breaking Bad is if you look at Episode one, and then if you look at the end of the season, season one, or you look at the end of seasons two or three, Walter White and Jesse, all the characters are 1,000 miles away from where they started as people in terms of character. I mean, they are just on opposite sides of the planet from where they began their character arc, where they were in their lives, and yet every single step is logical and makes sense. They don't have any overnight change, you don't ever get the sense they're being moved around like cardboard characters, like they're being moved around like chess pieces just for the sake of the script. Every single step that leads them to this inevitable massive change in their lives and their characters is exactly the step that you would take and that the situation almost forces them into. Nothing ever feels contrived on Breaking Bad.
The only problem I have with it, it is a beautifully engineered show. I will say that it's really well crafted, and watching the characters grow and change is really good. I like it. It was a very clever move, I think, to have Walter and Jesse hook up.
Yeah.
That he ended up with not just an ex-student, but an ex-student who failed chemistry. Because that creates a situation where he needs to explain to him stuff, which, of course, means he's explaining it to us. And all too often in TV, you have characters explaining things to each other for our benefit when they shouldn't have to actually be explaining it at all.
Right.
So in this case, it really always feels very natural that Jesse's going, what the hell is that? And he's going, it's thermite. And let me explain it to you. You know, and now we know, too. And also that he's a chemistry guy, and not just a chemistry teacher, but a genius who just happens to be a chemistry teacher because of, circumstances. And so he knows all this stuff. And that's great. And that's a wonderful little extra bit of sort of MacGyver Batman stuff that adds just some spice to the show as a whole. My only problem is having the brother-in-law who's the DEA agent.
Yeah.
That feels... I can see why you would add that in. And it does add a certain sense of menace and suspense, but coming into it, it feels a little bit forced. And coming into it where I am right now in season two, I could say it is taking him way too long to suspect Walt. It is taking him way too long. Once he's already found, the respirator with the high school's name on it, he knows that Jesse is involved in this somehow. Goes looking for Walt. Goes looking for Jesse because he's looking for Walter, comes across Tuco.
Right.
And it's taking him way too long to put two and two together and figure out that Walter's involved somehow.
The thing I love about the character of Hank is, we were talking about setting up expectations, is that they resist one of the great things about Breaking Bad is how they resist the temptation to make Hank just a big lunk.
Yeah, because he seemed like such a dick at the very beginning.
And he's a big, bald, stocky cop. Yeah. Any other show would just treat that as such a heavy-handed, caricature.
He's crude and bombastic, but he is at heart, I think, a good guy.
Yeah. Same thing with Jesse, where Jesse has a lot of layers to him and nuances, because you just think he's some dirtbag burnout kid, and he kind of is. But it's like nobody is any one thing. Like nobody is the hero. Nobody is the golden girl or the villain. I mean, everybody is sort of, has all of their own layers to them. And I'm not sure where you are with the whole deal of Jesse and his parents.
they have addressed that. So, I mean, he was there and then he was gone. And he had all the interaction with the younger brother.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of a contentious relationship with Jesse and his parents that I'm not going to say it's totally paid off because, you know, season four is just about to start. And so I don't know what's going to happen. But that really just – that goes places where you just could not possibly imagine. And again, it's where people – and it's that thing of people surprising you with their behavior – but they also don't do the thing of having someone undercut expectations just for the sake of doing the unexpected. That's the tricky thing about trying to subvert cliche, is that oftentimes the characters will do something totally illogical just because the writer is going like, they'll never see this coming. And you go, well, we'll never see it coming because no one would do that. Like, it doesn't make any sense. It's stupid. But Breaking Bad, they almost always have somebody make a decision that seems like it could be bad or disastrous or is unexpected, but they put it in such a context that you don't ever feel manipulated, but you see, like, well, that is really what you do. Like, you kind of have to do that. Mm-hmm. The other thing about the character of Walter White that I love is that, well, there's that whole thing of his transformation from being a nebbish, a very beta male, to I think, just by dint of not only finding something he's good at, but also just the sense of, like, he realizes he has to at least act the part of a tough guy to some degree, or he's never going to last in this business of making meth. But also, he has, you know, the cancer, and he's got the family to take care of, and he does reach. It's like Bill Carter was here yesterday, and he was talking about the reason he loves the Alaskan fishing villages, and he was in the war in Sarajevo. He was not, you know, fighting in the war, but he was there when the war was happening. He said that it strips away all of your pretense about who you pretend to be or who you act like, and it shows who you really are. And there's the thing where Walter White is like, his family is threatened, and so it becomes this very primal thing of, like, he becomes this protector that he probably always had the potential to be, but it was never brought out of him.
Well, it's also the whole transformative in the one episode where he just basically had to come to terms with everything that was going on. You know, rather than feel overwhelmed by all of his problems and by life and everything that he was dealing with and involved in, And the symbolic gesture being that him shaving his head.
Right.
Giving in to the fact he was losing his hair to the chemo, but also giving in to the idea that he's got cancer.
Right.
This is going on. These are the facts of my life right now, and this is who I've got to be. And he shaves the head. Then he gets the hat.
Yeah.
And I love the hat.
Yeah.
And he immediately just sort of becomes a badass.
Yeah.
Because, like, with the thing with Bill Carter, he's just sort of become the sort of boiled down version of fundamentally who he is and who he has to be.
Yeah, that there's no, he just has no time for frills. Yeah. There was only one door left for him to go through, and so he goes through it. Final thing about Breaking Bad just in general is that the other one of the other fantastic things they do is you and I, every single day, we just talked about it with Justified, stupid goddamn criminals. And you just think to yourself, like, you know, how great we would be as criminals because, you know, we have a little bit of intelligence, you know, and we're smarter than the average moron. And so, like, we'd be fantastic criminals. And this is a chance to see, like, how that actually works in reality. Here's a guy who's just razor sharp. I mean, he's just whip smart. What would happen if he decided to be, like, the world's best cooker of methamphetamine? And what you realize is that gives him a huge advantage, but he's still working in an industry, if you want to call it that, that is filled with thugs and idiots, including his partner.
Yeah.
And that you can just never totally escape that. That it gives you an advantage, but you're still just dealing in this world of people who are just impulsive jackasses and violent at that, and often cranked out of their brain on meth themselves. I'm looking forward to it, to seeing you as you get to the end of and they do, it has one of the best opening shots of a season ever, where it's just the slow black and white of, like, the slug moving along or the snail moving along the branch or something, and then it cuts to the pink toy just floating in the water.
The eyeball floating in the water, and then the eyeball gets it sinks to the bottom of the pool and gets sucked out the filter, and then the camera thing, and then the only color is the pink on this stuffed animal that's in the bottom of the thing, and the stuffed animal underwater has slowly turns, and you see one side of it is all charred and the eyes missing.
And that is a visual, the different perspectives on that same visual that they return to throughout the season over and over again. And which is why, and actually kind of gives me chills thinking about it, only because that's the thing where you realize that Vince Gilligan, they had to conceive the entire season. Because all of those images, it all links together at the end. And they had to think it all the way through.
At the end of that first episode, when nothing had come of that, and you start realizing, okay, that's something that's going to happen at some point in the future. And it's a really it's a really nice kind of scary, menacing kind of a what the hell happens kind of a thing.
And it's amazing that the network let them do it, because normally that's the sort of thing that the network would say, well, cut that. It's going to confuse people. Well, you're showing an eyeball, but where's the rest of the body? And you go, well, we'll pay it off.
Well, the eyeball was out of the toy.
Well, you know what I mean. But it's like they don't ever explain what you're looking at.
They don't explain why there's a teddy bear in the bottom of the pool and why it's charred and missing an eyeball. Yeah.
Well, we'll pay that off, you know, in 3 months. And, you know, normally network could be like, no, you can't bring something up because people are uncomfortable with things they don't understand. And it shows a great restraint on the part of the writing and also confidence on the part of the network. And it is a great sort of compelling device of like what the hell, like what is going on. So awesome. All right, it's fantastic. We got to do clue number 4, and I've got the greatest songs ever made. So let's do this. We'll do greatest songs ever made. We'll come back right after that. We'll do clue number 4. Maybe do a story to wrap everything up, and then we'll call it a day.
Because honestly,
snow is gone again.
Yeah. See, it's not like we have to rush out of here at any point. Nobody's coming in after us, and My drive home is going to be the same no matter what.
At some point, my dogs will destroy my home.
Oh, that's right. You got to let Philo out so he can be scared.
No, see, you won't be scared if the snow's gone.
Oh.
The horrible, evil, white villain that was covering the lawn, it was confusing and flummoxing, is gone. No, it's like I'll go home and Max will have sold everything. He'll have just, I'll just go home and there'll be just a truck going, and then going off down the street and the house. Max would be like that dog that just, he'd be like that guy that just put a neighbor's house up on Craigslist where he just said, like, come and take whatever you want. So. Can I just tell you this? First of all, Max has figured out somewhere. I didn't realize he knew how to open cupboards in the kitchen. That's a thing that I discovered last year at one point. So not only that, he has now figured out how to open the gate in front of our house.
Oh, nice.
Because the deal is we let him out in the morning to go, do their whatever and then come back inside. And we do the same thing at night. And it's like the other day I go out and I'm like, okay, fine, I'll come inside. Max, where the... Come on! And it's like I look down, and the gate has somehow been... Like, the latch has been, like, pushed, and the gate is open. And he's just wandering down the street after... Sounds like a cliche of something he would do. He's now just wandered down the street, and he's following someone who is walking home from Safeway with a big bag of food. And it was like... And I kept calling his name, and he kind of looked back for a second at me, and then he just kept walking and following this person home, who I don't even know if they noticed him. But somebody's walking home. They had everything like a baguette sticking out of the top, but there was a bunch of food with them. And I think they had like a little plastic bag from the deli. And so he was just following them home.
Oh, yeah.
And I actually had to do the thing of like going and physically picking him up, and he sort of growled at me, taking him back. And
but they have deli.
He has no compunction. He would leave us. He would drop us. He's not like a pet that has a lot of loyalty. He would drop us in a heartbeat if somebody came along and they just offered him like a sandwich, just to leave forever. He would totally go. So if it sounds like Max and I have a complicated relationship, I realize that most of this is in my own head, and I do know that. But you know what I'm talking about, where you said you taunt Bella by reminding her she can't speak English.
Right. That thing this morning where dog came, the cat was trying to lick me, because that's something she does. She wants, I like you. I want to groom you. It's like, stop it. Don't lick me. And the dog came in and was like, what's everybody doing? And she came in and stuck her head in my lap, and the cat was there. And so the cat leaned over and started just licking the dog on the ear. And the dog shook her head and just spun around and looked at the cat like, I will bite your head off. And I said, come on, Bella, give the kitty a kiss. Kiss the kitty. And so then she licked the cat. And then the cat was angry. And I'm sitting here going, I shouldn't get this much entertainment out of just watching them get annoyed with each other.
And yet, it's like my sister has several kids. And I don't really want children. She was, at one point I asked her, I said, like, you, why the kids? Why, what is the, what is the upside to you of having children? Why have you done this? And she said something really, because most people go, well, it's like you never really know love until you've held your newborn baby. And, or it's just, well, I feel like it's why God put us here so we can replenish the earth. I asked my sister one time, I said, why did you have kids? She goes, oh, they're hilarious. And I said, really? She goes, yeah, it's like having this like insane sitcom filled with retards all the time, like at your house. It's like it's like having the Marx Brothers living with you like at any given moment. They're ridiculous. They're completely ludicrous. And, there was a sort of purity to that answer that I liked. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We'll come back in just a moment. We'll do clue number 4 for this week's Name That Snack Contest. That is coming up, brought to you by E.H. Vending. Find out more about them at ehvending.com. So we'll do that here in just a few. Don't forget to join us tomorrow when our guest will be Mr. Big Jim Willig with another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101. It's time for another installment of The Greatest Songs Ever Made. There's a moment during the single season run of ABC's My So-Called Life when the character of Angela Chase is describing her heart's fondest desire, probably about Jordan Catalano, although I can't really remember at this point. And she says that she dreams of someone telling her that she is so beautiful it hurts to look at her. And it doesn't sound shallow or narcissistic when she says it. The phrase strikes a chord, and it's remained one of the show's most quoted moments because it reflects something that is nearly universal. The idea of someone telling you the sort of thing that, for the most part, only exists in television shows, or bad romance novels, or songs. Especially songs. Music, of course, finds love and its related and ancillary emotions to be an inexhaustible source of story and sadness and exuberance and inspiration. So much so that the compositions themselves become self-reflective at times, speaking not just to or about a specific person, but sometimes pondering the entire genre of which they're a part, the entire art form, and the powerful emotional underpinnings that connect all of the above. Now, few songs, of course, do all of this well or even successfully, since the concepts are so large as to be towering, terrifying, unless you happen to be a half-mad genius with a baritone voice, in which case you don't just attempt one such song, you attempt nearly 70 of them for a single release. You attempt to capture as many genres and styles as possible, from Depeche Mode to Johnny Cash, and you do it all with staggering accomplishment. And, this is most impressive, you do it in such a way that every one of these 69 songs sounds like a personal, individual, private love letter. You do it so well that the songs almost sound as though you're overhearing something not quite meant for your ears. And you are, despite yourself, lulled and charmed by the song for one simple reason. It's exactly what you would want someone to tell you. And done with equal parts dignity and grace and dorky, kind of aw-shucks charisma and honesty, the kind that only a total stranger can give to someone he'll never meet, someone in another time or place, someone listening through speakers and wires and ones and zeros, but hearing something so analog in its emotion that it skirts and circumvents whatever boundaries or cynicism you might have. Stephen Merritt knew what he was doing when he tackled the prospect of writing nearly 70 different love songs. Now, he's thought the material and the motivations all the way through, and he may not know who wrote the Book of Love, but he knows what it contains. Someone telling you that it is almost painful to look at you because you are so beautiful, or whatever else your heart might wish to hear. One of the greatest songs ever made, this is The Magnetic Fields and The Book of Love on The Rick Emerson Show.
You ought to give me wedding rings.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. You got your computational device open? Your laptop, is it on?
Yes.
So Cheryl just sent me a link. She says, this is the greatest website ever. Okay. It really is. I want you to go to isitsnowinginpdx.com. It's all one word. Isitsnowinginpdx.com.
Okay. And yes. Commence panic.
There you go. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505.
Oh, I know the person who did this. Stacey Bias.
Really?
Yeah, I know the person who made this.
It really is. It kind of sums the whole thing up. It's 503-505-6964. Don't forget, tomorrow we'll be joined by Mr. Big Jim Willig with another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. At the news desk, it's Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Arizona has a state flower, a state tree, even an official state neckwear. And coming this year, it could have its own official state firearm. Excuse me. Senate Bill 1610 would amend the Arizona Constitution to name the Colt Single Action Army Revolver as the state's official firearm. The revolver was first manufactured in the 1870s and quickly became standard issue for those who enlisted in the U.S. Army. The weapon is considered a collector's item today.
And what is the actual gun?
The Colt Single Action Army Revolver.
Okay, and so this is, so who is proposed? I mean, do we not have a state gun now?
Well, this is Arizona, and no, apparently they
don't. Oh, this is not here.
No, this is Arizona.
Okay, I was going to say for a minute that we was actually sort of cool.
I don't think Oregon has a state gun.
See, but that's, let's back up for a second. So we don't have a state gun. Arizona does, and they're replacing it, or they don't, and this is going to be it?
Well, the bill, they don't have one. They don't have an official state firearm.
Yet.
The bill was introduced on Monday for consideration on Tuesday by the state Senate Appropriations Committee.
Would you like to get some water?
Excuse me a moment. My throat went all.
That was just the greatest moment where you just lifted up your mug and you tilted it all the way back and there was nothing coming out because it's empty.
Yeah.
And so you just did that thing of sticking your tongue out a little bit as though that would magically get whatever, like, water vapor was sort of missed.
I caught, like, the two drops that dripped out of the cup.
Would you like some water from my water bottle over here?
No, I'm fine, actually.
Okay.
Anyway, it was co-sponsored by at least 43 Arizona senators and representatives, just under half the 90-member legislature.
Okay.
So they've decided they need a state firearm. Because apparently, I guess Arizona doesn't have any other more pressing things to be worried about right now.
No, apparently not. That is the sort of thing that might get some traction here, though. You could probably propose that. Oh, man, I didn't even read the RoboCop thing. So just real quickly, because I don't want to be another thing that I mentioned that I never actually got to. So apparently the latest on the RoboCop story, because this is that... Somebody had suggested that they wanted a RoboCop statue, and then the mayor said no, and then in Detroit,
yeah.
He finally relented and he said, well, yeah, I mean, if you can raise the money for it,
which is $20,000, I think, is what they needed.
Which is $20,000. So I'm going here right now. They have now raised $62,539, and by the way, that was with 30 days left to raise the money. I think they got like 45 days to raise it. They have 30 days left. They have already raised three times the amount.
Wow.
That is $62,539 from 2,390 people that have all contributed to this. And they've got this massive banner on the site now. It just says, part man, part machine, all crowdfunded. And then it just has a huge picture of the statue of RoboCop, the way it would loom over the city. And then on the screen, it's got the sort of like, it's got the little Chiron thing on the screen, like it's his prime directives being printed out, like in that sort of ASCII thing that says, prime directives, serve the public trust, protect the innocent, uphold the awesome. And now they've found a guy who's like a metalsmith. Is that what you call it?
Yeah.
Like a, you know, but a guy who, you know, who
a
can sculpt out of metal. So they found, says, we are extremely excited to announce that Fred Barton Productions has stepped up to donate use of the very same materials they were using to create their amazing one-to-one RoboCop statue. So I guess they found somebody who had made one of these in the past. And he's offered to make this one. He says, a Detroit statue is going to be completely the real deal, scaled up in size from these pieces. They found a guy who at one point had sculpted a life-size.
Life-size, yeah.
And he has agreed to make a scaled-up version of this based on his original model. Barton is MGM's official licensee for RoboCop. So he is the guy who is in, he makes the official replicas of RoboCop for MGM. They are the leader in studio-licensed celebrity robotic replicas. Come on, including the amazing RoboCop bust you see below. And he said they have offered to create a scaled-up version for Detroit. How they're the leader in studio-licensed celebrity robotic replicas. Yeah. You don't really think of that needing a leader because you don't really think of anybody doing that ever, much less several people apparently vying for the honor.
Although there are all these companies that do like replicas of swords and guns and things from movies. So why not robots?
Yeah, it's
RoboCop is a movie that I grew to appreciate as because I think I've talked about this before, that I was not a fan of Paul Verhoeven for a long time. I really disliked his movies a lot. And then, as many people do. And then one day I had that sort of thing where the light bulb clicked on, where I just suddenly got Verhoeven as...
In general or with RoboCop?
No, in all of it. All of his entire oeuvre, the whole thing.
It's all satire.
Understanding the stuff as him being an immigrant coming over here from a different country, looking at American culture with this jaded eye, and that every single one of his movies is satire about American culture.
Yeah.
And once I really understood the whole point of view of his movies, I have grown to just love them. Everything, you know, from Total Recall all the way up to Showgirls. I love his movies because I just suddenly got it.
That his whole thing is going like, you people are insane.
Yeah.
Look how insane you are. And then he shows us the way we look to him.
Right.
Yeah.
And yeah. And also one of my favorite movie deaths ever in RoboCop of my, one of my weirder longtime movie crushes, Miguel Ferrer.
Is he the guy that goes into the toxic waste?
As Bob Morton.
Bob Morton
in RoboCop. That is a spectacular movie death.
I have to tell you that one of my proudest possessions I have, Aaron sold these at geekinthecity.com, I think until the man found out about it and told him to knock it off, which sort of bugs me because Aaron was selling, so it's this shirt, it has the OCP logo on it, and it says, it has the OCP logo, and then below it, it says, I work for Dick Jones, which is great, but he got a cease and desist or whatever from the company, which sort of pisses me off because it's like this is the sort of thing that bugs me with copyright law, because there's a lot of dispute about, you know, copyright and satire and information wanting to be free and what can you charge for and what should people be able to use fair use for. It's not like that was replacing a product that they were making money on. It's not like it was a knockoff of a thing they were selling. Like, that shirt was created to fill a need because nobody sells stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I bought one, though, right before it got taken off the market. And I wear the – and I can tell you, when I went to the release of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, I think just by coincidence, I was wearing my OCP shirt. And I get it, like, about every 40 feet, I'd pass a guy who goes, RoboCop! Which is just awesome. Was it you that told me that they're remaking RoboCop – rebooting, reimagining RoboCop?
I might have, and then just immediately like wiped it from my memory if that was the case, because it's something that doesn't need to happen.
Or maybe am I just assuming that they are? But it seems like I read that they were trying to pitch a reboot of RoboCop, without Verhoeven, because who needs him? So anyway, and plus it's got because Bob Morton is the. Bob Morton's the guy that gets blown up with the hand grenade. He's the sleazy guy from OCP. He's not Ronnie Cox, but he's the younger guy.
Yeah.
And then there's Ronnie Cox, and then there's what's his name, who I can never remember, the dad from that 70s show. I can never remember his name.
I can never remember, yeah. But that's one of the – Patrick and I always talked about, that's one of the reasons why he's so awesome in that 70s show.
Because he's Clarence Boddicker.
Because he's Clarence Boddicker. And so it's like, I think there's this thing of he would be a great kind of – you know, menacing kind of dad to be afraid of anyway, because he's a really good actor and he plays that role really well. But for like an entire generation of people, though, he's also Clarence Boddicker.
Kurtwood Smith.
And so you're like, man, do not
Don't F with him.
Do not cross Clarence Boddicker. Do not stay out after curfew.
That's right. And just you talk about a guy, and he kind of made everything in that movie a catchphrase, even the things that probably weren't intended to be catchphrases. Like when he just goes, "Bitches leave," and it's like like 900 guys just texted me, "Bitches leave" in huge letters,
But he's also so great in that movie because he seems so. He is so cast against type, because when you hear the dialogue he's saying and you see his role in the movie, he himself, Kurtwood Smith, is so not the actor that should normally be cast in that role.
Right.
And so that makes him extra scary.
And the great thing about the Clarence Boddicker character is he's got that great sort of maniacal glee of he loves being a criminal. I mean, he loves being a criminal. He just loves it like nobody's business, and it's always fun to see those. It's like, that's why Die Hard is such a great movie, because if Die Hard didn't have that sense of glee, like it would just be a movie about terrorists, which is less fun. Yeah. It's exciting maybe, but not fun. But by giving them that sort of, it's Christmas, it's time of miracles, that whole, then it becomes a caper film. And RoboCop has some of that too. And it's helped by having the "I'd buy that for a dollar" guy and the, whatever. So anyway, it's just, RoboCop.
RoboCop.
Okay, I'm just going to end there. Did we do our one more story? We did. It was the gun thing. Okay. Really, and it's, here's the thing. If Arizona's going to do that, I think that's a state where that might work, because Arizona has that southwestern sort of, old west kind of outlaw vibe to it in a sort of charming touristy kind of way. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, it has a sort of classic... A classic Americana feel to it in terms of things like a firearm. Like you couldn't have a firearm, like a state firearm in Michigan. Like that would just seem wrong. It would just seem inappropriate and awful. We should do this right here. I have no idea what that blinky blurby sound that just happened was.
Yeah.
Did you ever hear that on a computer and you look and you're trying to figure out where it came from and nothing is happening that would have made that noise?
Occasionally, yeah.
All right. Well, in any event.
Just in life, too. I'll hear noises. You do that when you're in your house. You hear a noise,
yes.
And you go, "Well, what the hell is that?" And you look around, and 10 minutes later, you're going, "Well, I hope it wasn't anything bad because I can't figure out what that was."
And do you ever do this too, where it's like you hallucinate a specific sound? Like for the longest time, I would hallucinate the sound of my cell phone ringing. Back when I had like a regular generic cell phone, like it was like a Motorola, and it was just whatever the sound. And it's like I would be listening to the radio or have a song on, and I would swear to God that like it was like part of the song would sound exactly. Probably 2 or 3 or 4 times a week, I would actually have to check my cell phone because I would swear to God that I heard my cell phone ringing. And it wasn't there at all. Here's the thing that happened to me last night. I was just sitting at home, and I was doing something or other. But it was one of those things where definitively I knew that there was no music playing. It's because I was watching Justified, and then I'd paused it. And it was that thing where I stood there for a moment in my house convinced that I heard music playing somewhere, like, in the room with me. And I couldn't find it, and it wasn't there. And then I went and used the bathroom, came back, and it was gone. And so I think it was just a little momentary auditory hallucination that was happening. And it gives you a little window of what it'll be like when you're old and crazy and your brain is falling apart. The RoboCop reboot was going to be done by Darren Aronofsky, but was canceled in July by MGM. All right, so there we go. It's time for clue number 4 for this week's Name That Snack contest. And that is brought to you by EH Vending. Find out more about them by going to ehvending.com. That is ehvending.com. It is one of many ways that you can get a hold of them. You can go to ehvending.com online, find out more about all that they do. You can also call them if you're in Vancouver. It's 360-816-1853, 503-897-8204. Again, in Vancouver, 360-816-1853, or in Portland, 503-897-8204. James and Josh, who are longtime listeners of the Rick Emerson Show, going on 13 years now, and they've actually had their own business called Equipment Horizon, which they do a lot of industrial equipment, a lot of things for kitchens, and they have moved into the vending business, and they're doing that flawlessly, I might add, not just by dint of using this program for their many marketing needs, but also because they are serving people who sometimes just get shut out when it comes to vending services because they've only got one location or they've only got 2 locations or their budget is just not what a typical vending company wants to make you pay. So if you're finding that you're just not able to find a vending company that meets your needs, or if they ask you how many franchises, how many outlets you have, and you go, well, it's just the one place or the two, and they tell you that they're not going to deal with you unless you have five locations. You talk to E.H. Vendor, you're going to find something that makes it worthwhile for your budget and that serves all of your vending needs, whether it's coffee, whether it's snacks, whether it's soda, whether it's any combination of the above. So they are looking to provide vending services for businesses that are maybe having a little bit of difficulty finding the right deal, or if you're just paying for it right now, but you want to get an estimate and shop around a little bit and see if you can save some money, as we all wish to do. So you can contact them at ehvending.com. Here's clue number four. Tomorrow we'll give you clue number five. And once clue number five has been given tomorrow, that is Friday, if you're the first person to correctly identify the snack via snack@rickemerson.com, you will get a bag of consumable goodness from E.H. Vending. Today's clue is 39 of 44. That is today's clue. 39 of 44. Tomorrow we'll give you clue number five, after which, if you're the first person to correctly identify the snack at snack@rickemerson.com, you will bring honor on your family house for all time. There you go. That is E.H. Vending who provides that for us today. Tomorrow we will have Mr. Big Jim Willig in the studio for another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101. So don't miss it. We'll have a brief musical interlude here, after which we'll have an encore of today's Legion of News episode, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District here in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from y'all. So thank you for listening and thank you for spreading the word very generously. We appreciate that. It is never, ever taken for granted, my friends, my chums, my amigos, my companions. It is Thursday, February 24th, 2011, and that is The Frequency, Kenneth. As always, thank you for listening. Be safe. See you all tomorrow. Bye now.